Good afternoon. We bring our Tuesday, February 11th meeting to order. Will we please stand for the Pledge of Allegiance? Immediately following the Pledge of Allegiance, we will have a...
We wanted to raise several hundred blankets and we asked if we could help and he said yes.
If they could donate at least just one blanket.
Okay. We're going to have the Pledge of Allegiance by Mrs. Jessica Avila from Deland High School. And you can come forward.
And we are going to help him.
She's going to sing the national anthem and then we will have the Pledge of Allegiance. Go ahead, Mrs. Avila. Thank you for joining us today, those that are viewing from online and our guests in the audience. At this time, I would like to introduce my dais from at my left, Mr. Carl Persis, representing District 4. Next to Mr. Persis, I have Mr. Ruben Colon, representing District 5. Our school board attorney, Mr. Ted Doran. To my far right, I have our agency clerk, Mrs. Erin Lieben. Next to Mrs. Lieben, I have Mrs. Jamie Haynes, representing District 1. Next to Mrs. Haynes, I have Mrs. Linda Cuthbert, my vice chairman, representing District 3. Next to Mrs. Cuthbert, I have Dr. Scott Spritz, our superintendent, and I'm Ida Wright, representing District 2, chairman of Volusia County Schools. Items for approval on the agenda are items 3.01, 5.02, 6.01, 15.01, 16.02, 18.01 through 18.03, and 20.01. At this time, we normally allow my colleagues, if they would like to make a comment about things that are happening in their district, to do so at this time. I open up the floor with Ms. Jamie Haynes.
Good afternoon. I want to first say that yesterday I had the honor of attending the Central Florida Coalition School Board meeting where Mr. Persis is now the chair for the entire thing, and he did a fabulous job yesterday. But Dr. Fritz also joined us, and what was really nice is as a group of superintendents, assistant superintendents, school board members, and district staff, we were able to talk about the legislation and what's happening in Tallahassee. And we had some great conversation, and we did receive a document from Osceola County where the gentleman there had laid out all the legislation, and I think we'll get it forwarded to all of you so that you can see the highlights and what's happening. Mm-hmm. But there's lots of great things going on out in the schools too, and I'm enjoying every moment of reading and judging social studies fairs and things like that. Mm-hmm. But I think another highlight was last week when we honored all of our school counselors, and it was so great to see so many individuals in one room that every day are making a difference for our students. And I hope that In Tallahassee, they continue to recognize the difference that they make, and I'm hoping we'll have some funding so we can add to that.
Yes.
Thank you. Ms. Cuthbert?
Good afternoon, everyone. This past Saturday, I was able to attend the Environthon at Spruce Creek Park, where our high schools competed against one another in soil and water life, in the wildlife and fisheries and estuaries. Teams from, Pine Ridge, Seabreeze, I think Mainland attended,
University.
Spruce Creek was there. We're all there, but it was the same team who came before us last board meeting, the Advancing Glaciers team from Spruce Creek High School, who won again. So congratulations to them. I want to congratulate our Spelling Bee winner, it's a middle school student from Creekside Middle. Congratulations to her. And her co-runner-up is from Southwest Middle, as well as it's important that we remember who our alumni are at each of our schools. And Saturday ago, the CAPS Spaghetti Dinner, which is the Alumni Association at New Smyrna Beach High School, honored two remarkable former graduates of New Smyrna Beach High School, and that was Stephen Hardock. He's in his last year of teaching art at Coronado Elementary. He's the one who painted the rotunda at the Mainland High School Media Center, as well as Margaret Roberts, in her last position was the city attorney for Port Orange. So congratulations to all of them. Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Persis?
Thank you, Ms. Wright. I want to thank Jamie for attending the Central Florida School Board Coalition meeting. We meet at the Orange County School Board office, and there's 14 districts involved with that, so greatly appreciate you guys fitting that in. I want to thank Erin Lieben, because she had a huge responsibility to get the word out to, I think that email list was over 100 and 130, my gosh, and just trying to clean it up and get it all right. So, yeah, so that was our debut there. I also appreciate the people. Let's see, Ms. Wright, you and I were at Champion Elementary.
Yes.
I forget what day it was.
Friday.
I think it was a Friday. And we were reading to students there, African American History Month, and great books, and they were taking us around. So wonderful students and staff we have everywhere. Our article in the paper today, what was that, about the 60 students trying out for the performing arts thing at Atlantic High School?
Yes.
And then
Showtime.
High School,
Showtime.
Spruce Creek High School's doing Mamma Mia.
Mamma Mia, yeah. So we just have so many talented students and so many talented teachers, and I just want to give a big shout-out to all of them. Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Cologne?
All right. So first of all, shout-out to our Pine Ridge students who walked away with 28 superior medals over the weekend, and anything above 5 goes to state, so we blew that out of the water. This past week, thanks to our partnership with Advent Health, Ross Chastain came to Galaxy Middle, to the STEM Academy, was able to tour there, and we were able to reveal the car that's going to be driven in all three races. Ross Chastain, it was run in three races. It'll be over the weekend. It was amazing to see the kids and the application of what they learned, and for them to be able to interact as well with the race car driver. This morning, Friendship Elementary, so shout out to Schoolway Cafe, Mr. Robinson, started at Friendship Elementary the Breakfast in the Classroom. And so what I've learned is that normally they would feed about 220 students. Today was closer to 242 students. So you figure that's a whole classroom of students that might have gotten there late, maybe didn't get there in time for breakfast, who were able to eat. In addition, there was mention of the interaction of the students and how they were able to spend time together that way. So that's exciting. And lastly, congratulations to Dr. Christina Raimundo, who was just got her doctorate, principal at Friendship Elementary. So congratulations, Christina, because I know you're listening.
Thank you, and I won't restate many of you, and I attended several events, but the one thing that everyone forgot was Good Morning America at 2 or T Small.
Oh, that's right.
But thank you. I appreciate
that.
Dr. Milton, and it was a great honor to be there to surprise her with a live live viewing on Good Morning America. She was the educator for Monday, and she was able to leave school and go get a massage. And so congratulations to Tour T Small and Dr. Milton. So we're going to move on our agenda, moving on to items number 2.01. Superintendent Fritz, were there any agenda changes?
No changes.
Thank you. Hearing none. Is there approval for the agenda?
So moved.
Second.
The agenda has been properly approved and second. Any discussion? Hearing none. All in favor, signify by aye.
Aye.
Those that oppose? Ayes have it and the motion is carried. Moving on to item 3.01, resolution 2020-09, Superintendent Fritz.
I'd like to ask Ms. Heather Demiola, Director for Schoolway Cafe, and Ms. Valerie Hansen, Assistant Director for Schoolway Cafe, and Mr. Greg Aiken, Chief Operating Officers, to come forward as we recognize a National School Breakfast Week.
We have a special guest.
Looks like I see that.
Madam Chair, board members, Dr. Fritz, thank you for this opportunity for us to present to you this evening. I'm going to turn it over to Valerie and let her introduce our new guest here. She's excited to speak to you guys tonight, and then we'll go over it real quick with our resolution.
Well, good afternoon. We are going to save our special guest the best thing about this presentation for last. If I can go ahead and start with the presentation. Good afternoon, Chairman Wright, Mrs. Cuthbert, school board members, and Superintendent Fritz. Schoolway Cafe's mission is positively impacting students by serving delicious, healthy meals. We are here today to talk about school breakfast and to ask for a resolution recognizing National School Breakfast Week, which is March 2nd through the 6th, 2020. This year's theme for National School Breakfast Week is School Breakfast Out of This World. School Breakfast Week is a week-long celebration of the National School Breakfast Program, permanently established in 1975 by an act of Congress. Schools across the country celebrate with special menu items, events, and student activities. National School Breakfast Week is the perfect time to bring attention to our breakfast program and set a goal to increase participation. Studies show that children who eat school breakfast are more likely to reach higher levels of achievement in reading and math, score higher on standardized tests, have better concentration and memory, and are more alert and maintain a healthy weight. Schoolway Cafe serves healthy food that students love to eat. Schoolway Cafe positively impacts students. We serve approximately 14,000 breakfasts daily to our students, and we have over 400 school meal heroes who love our students and work hard for them every day. We believe in the importance of a healthy breakfast to start the day. For the last several years, Schoolway Cafe has and continues to offer complimentary breakfast to all students, regardless of their household's income. Eating breakfast at school helps students perform better. Studies also show that academic achievement among students who eat school breakfast tends to rise, especially in math. Schools report that offering all students free breakfast improves attendance, tardiness, and student behavior. The Florida Breakfast Challenge, which is sponsored by the Florida Department of Agriculture and Consumer Services, No Kid Hungry, and the Dairy Council of Florida, compares the number of breakfasts served from January through March of 2019 to the number served from January through March of 2020. All of our schools are enrolled in the challenge. Schools with the highest increase in breakfast participation, based on percentage, could win a combination of cash for use in their meal program, equipment, and recognition. And here are just a few photos that we have that highlight last year's School Breakfast Week.
The hairnet does it every time. It's just no good photo for the hairnet.
Yeah, I don't have one.
Don't forget to follow us on social media to see all the National School Breakfast Week activities and use the hashtag NSBW2020. And today we brought a special guest, Ms. Abigail Siskoyas, a third grader from Port Orange Elementary, who would like to share her thoughts about school breakfast.
Good afternoon, Chairman Wright, members of the board, and Superintendent Fritz. My name is Abigail Siskoyas. I am a third grader at Port Orange Elementary, and I eat school breakfast every day. My mom says it's the most important meal of the day, but I just think it tastes good. My favorite breakfast is French toast sticks. All of my friends like it, too. And even the teachers come to the cafeteria on French toast stick day. Lunch ladies always make sure we have fruit, too. I love apple slices. I like eating breakfast at school with my friends because I know it gives me the brain power I need for science and energy for recess. I guess that's why Mom says it's the most important meal of the day. Thank you.
And we do look forward to seeing some of you helping us serve breakfast the week of March 2nd through the 6th. We know some of you have already reserved your time slots.
Great job, Abigail. Yes. Superintendent Fritz.
The superintendent recommends the approval of Resolution 2020-09, recognizing March 2nd through the 6th, 2020, as National School Breakfast Week.
You've heard the superintendent recommendation. Is there a motion?
So moved. Second.
The motion has been properly moved and second. Any discussion? Hearing none. All in favor?
Aye.
Those that oppose? Ayes have it, and the motion is carried. Again, congratulations and great job.
Yes. Go Port Orange. Thank you.
Moving down to items 4.01, public participation. Okay. Thank you. Moving down to items 5.01, are there any items removed from the consent agenda?
No, ma'am.
I take a motion to approve the consent agenda as printed.
Madam Chair, I wanted to pull out 7.01 for discussion.
Okay.
Ms. Bethune-Cookman.
Okay. So do you still want to pull it?
You want to recuse yourself?
So on the agenda, 7.01 is dealing with the school improvement plan agreement with Bethune-Cookman University. So we're going to pull that and handle that as a separate item.
Okay, Madam Chair, I move approval of the consent agenda minus item 7.01.
Okay.
Second.
The motion has been properly moved and second. Any more discussion?
I have a question. So
sure.
We're going to do that as an individual item today?
Yes.
Yes.
All right, thank you.
Any other discussion? Hearing none, all in favor?
Aye.
Those that oppose? Ayes have it, and the motion is carried. Thank you. And so now we'll go on to 7.01. I will pass the gavel to Vice Chairman. I have to recuse myself.
Yeah, we'd like to ask the representative from Bethune-Cookman to come forward.
Good afternoon, Superintendent Fritz, school board members, to my colleague, Ida Wright. I'm Helena Mariela Walren, and I serve as provost at Bethune-Cookman University. And on behalf of our board of trustees and our President Dr. Brent Kreit, we're just delighted to be here. As you know, Bethune-Cookman has a long-standing relationship and partnership with Volusia County Schools. I'm starting my 24th year at Bethune-Cookman University. 17 of those years, I served as professor in the College of Education. And so I've had the pleasure of working with many, many outstanding and committed teachers throughout the years as we have worked together to prepare teachers. I'm delighted to say that many of them are still serving in Volusia County as teachers and assistant principals and instructional coaches, and just delighted to be here and to extend our collaboration and partnership through this endeavor between the Bob Billingsley School of Hospitality Management and Volusia County Schools. And I want to thank Dr. Williams Bryant, the dean of the School of Hospitality Management, and her staff, and the partners on the district side for working diligently and to make sure that we are now here, and it's come to this point, and just delighted to see what other partnerships and collaborations we can engage in the future and what will come from this. So,
thank you, Dr. Warren. And may I say thank you wholeheartedly to Miss Rachel Rutledge, who is the CTE coordinator from Volusia County Schools, and Dr. Kristen Pierce and their colleagues for spearheading this opportunity, the Career Pathways Articulation Agreement. And this has been a long time in the making. We worked very hard to get it to this point. It is indeed a huge development in our relationship and will forge a pathway and create synergies between the Bethune-Cookman University School of Hospitality and the 9 high school academies in hospitality, tourism, and culinary within the county of Volusia. It will serve as a catalyst to engage the students and to give them an opportunity to learn about and study hospitality management. This is literally a game changer for us at Bethune. And the 10 college credits that they are they can earn, and that is the makeup of the agreement. The students will have the ability to earn up to 10 credits towards their undergraduate degree in hospitality. Will save them time and scarce dollars. So it will give them also access to a wide array of opportunities that are being left on the table right now, and scholarships, and ultimately lucrative career paths in the hospitality and tourism industry, which is vast and growing within our region. So it is hoped that this MOU will be the first of its kind that will pave the way for other disciplines at the university to create such partnerships with Volusia County Schools. So thank you to the board. Thank you, Madam Chair and Mr. Superintendent. And we look forward to moving in this direction.
Are there any questions from the board?
Comment? Mm-hmm. Yes. So first of all, I want to thank you all for partnering with us. I think that as you highlight how this is game-changing, I think this was a long time coming. And it wasn't long ago I looked over to Ms. Ida Wright and said, you know, how can we make this work? And is there an opportunity? We've just gotten our new president. And so to see this come before us made me so excited that I had to call a friend and borrow a tie. So that
we saw that.
Yes. And so Mr. Victor Ramos was kind enough to lend me a tie, and so I wear it with great pride. And thank you all for believing in our schools, and I'm excited. Thank you.
Thank you.
I have a question, just a question, just a clarification. I'm not sure why Ms. Wright has to recuse herself.
Well, I guess because we didn't really discuss this in advance. But I think it's her viewpoint that because she's upper-level management, that maybe her position with the university is such that she would personally benefit by the vote, and I think that's debatable, but I'm okay with her recusing herself if she chooses to. Quite frankly, I'm okay if she votes.
Yeah,
to be honest,
I am too.
But that's up to her. I'll defer.
It's all good. It's all good. It's all good.
And we're glad to be back at the table. We've always had a relationship with Volusia County Schools, and we're glad to be back at the table with Volusia County Schools.
Okay, Thank you. Dr. Fritz, is there a recommendation?
There is. There's a recommendation that the articulation agreement with Bethune-Cookman University be approved.
Is there a motion?
So moved.
Second.
Second. By Mr. Persis. Any further discussion? All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. All those opposed, please say nay. The ayes have it, 4-0.
Yay.
Thank you. With one recruit.
Abstain.
Hard word to pronounce. All right. Thank you.
Thank you so much. Congratulations. Ladies,
could we have your picture, please, out here? And we're going to take a 3-5 minute break to have our pictures taken. Thank you.
Moving on to item 13.01, superintendent announcements. Superintendent Fritz.
This Saturday, February 15th, we have the Regional Science Olympiad competition at 8 a.m. at Embry-Riddle Aeronautic University. On Monday, February 17th, is President's Day. All schools will be closed. District offices will remain open. Also on Monday, February 17th, we have the National PTA Founders Day. On Thursday, February 20th, we have the Fact Fair from 5:30 to 7 p.m. at New Smyrna Beach Middle. And our next regular school board meeting is Tuesday, February 25th at 5:30 in this boardroom.
Thank you. Thank you. Moving down to items 15.01, administrative appointments. Superintendent Fritz.
I would like to ask Dr. Dyer to come forward. Board members, as Dr. Dyer makes her way to the table, I'd like to share with you that I asked her to go out to Ortona Elementary School after our winter holidays and to fill in as acting principal. And I can tell you that she graciously agreed to do that. When she talked to me on the phone, she mentioned how important it was to be there for the children when they get back. And so as I showed up that first day to introduce her to staff, she was already there at work, working with children. And so when we advertised the position, we went through our process that I've highlighted for you in the past where we did a community interview. We had teachers, we had parents, we had SAC members. They interviewed with our area superintendent, and we got 3 good quality applicants. And from that list, Dr. Dyer was the number one. She came to the district office, the area superintendents, and myself interviewed her again, and again, she was number one. I'm going to read a little bit about her because I think it's important for that we understand what kind of principal I'm recommending to you. Dr. Dyer graduated from Stetson University with a bachelor's in secondary English education. She also received her master's in ed leadership from Stetson and her doctorate in ed leadership from the University of Central Florida. And here's a little subjectivity. She had the toughest dissertation chair there, Dr. Rose Taylor. No question, she was mine as well. Dr. Dyer has been in the district for 18 years. She started as a teacher at Pathways Elementary in 2002. Her first administrative appointment was assistant principal at Pine Ridge High School, where she served from 2006 to 2012. She went to work in Volusia and served as the district K-12 curriculum specialist next. Ladies and gentlemen, it's my intent to recommend Dr. Dyer as the next principal for Ortona Elementary.
Thank you. You've heard the superintendent recommendation. Is there a motion?
So moved.
Heartily second.
The motion has been properly moved and second. Any discussion? Sure.
How do you feel?
I'm excited. You're excited, yes.
Okay. What's your school population?
220 students.
So have you learned all their names yet?
Not yet, but I'm getting there.
You'll be great. Congratulations.
Yeah. Thank you.
Thank you. Any other discussion?
You have a teacher on assignment to help you, Gina?
Yes. I forget She's her last. Great. Campanella.
She is back to Campanella. Oh, okay. Mm-hmm. Well, that's how I always knew her. Okay, great. Well, she's a good one.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Okay. Any other discussion? Hearing none, all in favor, motion by aye.
Aye.
Those that oppose, ayes have it, and the motion is carried. Congratulations. And before Dr. Dyer speaks, can I have Mike Dyer join Dr. Dyer? Mr. Dyer was Volusia County School Board former, superintendent, Lord have mercy, general counsel. And he's now the interim general counsel for Volusia County. So welcome, and just want you to join your lovely bride.
Thank you. Good afternoon, Chairman Wright, school board members, Superintendent Fritz. First, I want to thank you, Dr. Fritz, for trusting me to care for the students, teachers, and families of the Ortona Elementary School community over the past month. During the Christmas break, when I decided that my word for 2020 was faith, I really didn't know that God was going to take me quite so literally. But truly, it's been the best job I never knew I always wanted. From walking classrooms to opening slushies to holding snakes and giving hugs, serving as principal of an elementary school is an amazing, fun, unpredictable adventure that I feel lucky to take part in. I appreciate the support and encouragement of my husband, Mike, my sons, Luke and Isaac, my parents, friends, co-workers, and mentors. I am especially indebted to Susan Freeman, Rachel Hazel, Jen Williams, and to all the other principals who let me phone a friend whenever I had questions or situations that needed problem solving. I would also like to say a big thank you to my Dolphin family at Ortona, the teachers, parents, staff, and community for welcoming me in and showing me the Ortona way. In any role that I have served, it has been my goal to ensure that every child has a safe education and excellent teachers who engage their students in rigorous, standards-aligned instruction. I'm thrilled about the opportunity to work with everyone at Ortona to make sure that our school is a place where students love to learn and teachers love to work. Thank you for entrusting me with this fantastic position.
Okay, congratulations. Don't go too far, Dr. Dye. You can have a seat right up front because we want to take a picture.
Okay.
We have one more, and then we'll take pictures, okay?
All right.
Thank you. Okay. Superintendent Fritz?
Board, you tasked me with something when I became on board, and you told me to make sure that our student safety was number one, and you made sure that I had someone looking at that 365 days a year, 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. And so we went off and partnered with Sheriff Chitwood, and we started conducting interviews for a director of security to really make sure that we were able to do that. Sheriff Chitwood was such a wonderful partner in this interview process. He came here tonight. I'd like to ask Michelle Newman to come forward, please. As Michelle makes her way up here a little bit, let me tell you a little bit about her. Lieutenant Newman is a local graduate from Taylor Middle High School. Afterwards, she enlisted in the United States Air Force upon her graduation. She served as a security police officer for 4 years. She was honorably discharged from the military, whereupon she attended and graduated from Daytona State's Police Academy. Upon graduation, Ms. Newman was hired by the Volusia County Sheriff's Office, where she was a law enforcement officer for 21 years. During that time, she earned a bachelor's degree in organizational management from Warner University and her master's degree in criminal justice from the University of Louisville. In March of 2019, she was selected to participate in the Homeland Security Master's Program. This program is co-sponsored by the Department of Homeland Security and FEMA. Her most recent assignment at the Sheriff's Office was a lieutenant supervising the School Resource Deputy Program, where she worked closely with Mr. Aiken and the school safety team. Ladies and gentlemen, it is my intent to recommend Lieutenant Newman to be our Director for Security.
Okay. Thank you. Welcome, Ms. Newman. You've heard the superintendent recommendation. Is there a motion?
So moved.
Second.
The motion has been properly moved and second. Any discussion?
I think there's so many questions we have. I would like to have a workshop about exactly your role, your job, what you're looking for in our schools. But let's wait a month or two until you become acclimated, and then come back and tell us what you think, based on what you see now as opposed to maybe in April. So I would like to hear from you what your view is coming from the outside and then coming into our school system, because I give a great deal of credit to your opinion. So thank you if you could do that for us.
Thank you.
Congratulations.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Welcome. I think it's awesome. I think it's awesome that it's a female leading this whole charge, too. Sheriff Chitwood, he just smiled when I said that, so that was good. What I'd like to know, probably just a little bit, is how she will continue to work with the sheriff's department as well as with our school districts. How does... Can you speak a little bit to that?
Yes, I certainly can. Part of the reason that she stood out was her positive connections with the police department. And Sheriff Chitwood, I will share with you, said to me, quote, unquote, she's next on the list for captain. Yeah. So I knew I had a good one. And so that partnership was defined. We talked about that quite a bit, that she would work with the SRDs. Her job is going to be one where she goes around and she checks our security. She's going to be responsible for training. She's going to be making sure our administrators know what to look for and receive that training. I did go ahead and team her up with one of the leading ones in our state that I feel like is an excellent director for safety and security, so she's going to job shadow. She is going to finish her program for the Homeland Security because I think that's really important for us. But she will be working not only with the sheriff, but this is one, her soft report, she'll be working with Greg, but safety's got to be so important that she's going to be evaluated by me.
I see. And so then she would be making recommendations at various schools,
yes.
Ways that they could do things better, more efficiently.
Yes, and I will tell you that I told her in the interview, and the principals will hear it on March 4th from me when she says it. It's expected that it gets done.
Great.
That's what we want.
Thank you.
And so I want you to know, and I think you've heard this already, but you have our full support. And everything you do matters to us. And so make it happen, and thank you for choosing us.
Thank you, sir.
Mm-hmm. I want to say congratulations. And I was so excited when I read the part about the United States Air Force, because that's near and dear to my own heart. I have someone currently serving in the Air Force. But I also want to say thank you for returning to your community and to being a part of this, because this is what we want for every student right now that we're educating. We want them to go on and find the career that they love, and we hope and pray that they'll return and be an active part of our community. So thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. And hopefully, I'm sure you're excited. I see your family, but let us take the vote and make it official. And then we'll hear from you. You can introduce your family, and I'm sure the sheriff would love to say something. I've never seen him speechless.
I've never met him like a poet.
So you've heard the recommendation of the superintendent. Ready for the vote? All in favor?
Aye.
Those that oppose? Ayes have it, and the motion is carried. Congratulations.
Madam Chair, members of the board, Superintendent Fritz, thank you all so very much. I'm completely honored to have been selected to be the Director of Safety and Security for Volusia County Schools. My training, education, and professional experience at both in the military and at the Sheriff's Office, I feel have prepared me for what I consider to be my most important position, which is the safety and security of our students, faculty, and staff. It is my goal to support the district's mission by ensuring that a safe and supportive environment is provided on all school campuses so that our students can receive a 21st century education and reach their highest potential. I want to thank Sheriff Chitwood and the Volusia County Sheriff's Office and all my friends and mentors for their guidance and support through my 21 years of law enforcement. But most importantly, I want to thank my husband, Chris, my son Jake, and my parents are here in the audience for their unwavering support and dedication in all my professional and educational endeavors. Thank you so much.
I'm positive you can't.
I don't know, Michelle. Thank you, Madam Chair. I think when the superintendent, first of all, you need to know the process that went out there. You should be so proud of your HR for putting this together. You got some really great applicants. I think the thing that made Michelle stand out is her current assignment is oversees the SRDs. So she knows all about the law, knows all about the problems that are going on. And the one thing I talked to the superintendent about is she's hungry. She's got a passion to succeed. And that's, I think, the key in hiring her is that, her passion to succeed and her passion for her job. And we're going to miss her, but we're keeping her on as a reserve deputy so that she'll have the powers of arrest, she'll have a badge, she'll have everything. She'll still have that connection to the sheriff's office, and we're here to support in any way we can to make sure, as the superintendent said, when people hear Volusia County schools, they're going to know that we're the model for school safety in the state of Florida.
Very good. Thank you. Don't move too far. We're going to take a photo with Dr. Dyer, and then we'll take a photo with you.
Okay, thank you so much.
Student discipline, Superintendent Fritz.
I'm going to ask Ms. Susan Freeman to come forward. Ms. Freeman has graciously filled in. Rowan was called away, so Ms. Freeman's going to fill in for this evening.
Good afternoon, Chairman Wright, board members, and Superintendent Fritz. The District Student Placement Committee is recommending to the superintendent that he request the board extend the suspension for the identified students through February 25th, 2020. Student Alpha ID 1UHKY, 1QNCW, 1QLPC, 1QKOR, 1SBJR, 1YGXU, 1TEAM, 1SFSJ, 1TQMW, 1SNYZ, 1QDQQ, 1QCML, 1VRTL, 1QUDI, and 1YAVG.
The superintendent recommends the board extend the suspension of the students identified from school attendance through February 25th, 2020 for the purpose of further study evaluation.
You've heard the superintendent's recommendation. Is there a motion?
Move approval.
The motion has been properly moved and second. Any discussion? Hearing none, all in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Those that oppose, ayes have it, and the motion is carried. 16.02, Superintendent Fritz.
Go ahead, Ms. Freeman.
The District Student Placement Committee is recommending to the superintendent that he request the board extend the suspension from school-sponsored transportation for the identified students through February 25th, 2020. Student Alpha IDs 1QMUX, 1RSZP, and 1RTSV.
Superintendent recommends the board extend the suspension of the students identified from school-sponsored transportation through February 25th, 2020 for the purpose of further study and evaluation.
You've heard the superintendent recommendation. Is there a motion?
Madam Chair, I move that the board extend the suspension of these students from transportation. Is there a second?
Second.
The motion has been properly moved and second. Any discussion? Hearing none, all in favor, signify by aye.
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 Those that oppose, ayes have it, and the motion is carried. Thank you, Ms. Freeman. Mm-hmm. Moving on to item 17.01, presentation, Superintendent Fritz.
I'd like to call Mr. Greg Aiken forward. Greg, I believe you're bringing Brandon with you. Is that correct? From ABM. This will be, board members, this is a report on the key performance indicators to this point of the school year.
Okay, let me get this call up real quick. Madam Chair, board members, Dr. Fritz, thank you for this opportunity for us to come forward tonight to talk about our ABM contract we currently have. As you know, 2 years ago, we actually extended the contract for 5 years. This contract ends in 2023. Briefly, what I want to show you is our APP, our APA Level 2. Last year, our scores, so what we actually scored them on, and that's the presentation you're going to see from Mr. Clark, so that'll be just a few minutes. The APA Level 2, last year we scored at 80%. This year, through the summertime, we actually worked and we moved up the score to 85% for a pass rate. What you see in front of you today is actually the scores from our first and second quarter, and then the district average is up on top. So custodian is 91.87%. Grounds is at 90% with a 91.4% overall rating. Although we did have some schools that were struggling, Mr. Clark and his team have jumped in, and anytime I call Mr. Clark, he actually responds immediately to address the issue. Same with Cordell. He's in charge of the grounds as well. So you can see we had several schools that actually failed, but if we were scoring them as we did last year, most of those would have passed except for one under custodian and one under grounds. So we just started doing the grounds evaluation. The next slide is a report card. This is an opportunity for our administrative staff, either the principal or the assistant principal, to respond back to ABM on their overview of the cleanliness of their campuses. This is their opportunity to lay out exactly what their concerns are and address those as well, and they can actually contact them as well. As you can see, we have an 88.75% response rate, and most of those that we have at hallways, et cetera, all the way down to district average, we're above the 80% there. Response rate here in the past has been about 64% from the principals back to us. We've asked the principals here recently, we would like to see 100% because it's their input, it's their campus. We want to hear from them to see what they have. So let me get into Brandon. Mr. Clark is our coordinator. He's the one I work with and contact all the time to make sure that we meet what we currently have. And I don't know why that didn't go into presentation mode, but go ahead. Mr. Clark.
Can we change these?
Yeah, we can change these. Yep.
All right, good afternoon, Madam Chair, fellow board members, and Superintendent Fritz. Appreciate you giving us the opportunity to come and present some of the data for you this afternoon. As requested, we did put some of the KPR key performance indicators, the information together for you. I want to provide some historical data as well as some currently trending data to give you a picture of kind of where we came from, where we've been, and where we're going in the future. The first slide that I want to cover is, this is a representation of this red line here of the overall district inspection scores. These are the core district inspection scores. So when we talk about KPIs, there's three key performance indicators that we use. The first one are core district inspection scores, where there's two inspectors that the county has in-house that they go on via what's called a core program, and they do inspections, quality inspections on us. The second one is the report card grades, which is the feedback from the principals. They score us similar to what Greg showed. They score in those six or seven respective areas in terms of how they feel the cleanliness of their campuses. And then internally, our third KPI, we do site inspections, and that's an ABM program, and it's actually a web-based program where all of our managers go out as well as district managers and zone managers, and we do inspections, quality inspections as well. Not only do we do quality inspections, we also do safety inspections. I won't be presenting any of that safety data today, but if you would like to see that, I could certainly provide that to you all at any time. A lot of this information, just so you know, is also covered in our quarterly client business review. So we do meet once a quarter with Greg and the team to go over a lot of this data and look at the trends and, you know, make decisions in terms of where can we make improvements. I feel like we've done a phenomenal job from the inception of the contract, automating a lot of things that I know Aramark wasn't doing to drive the communication piece and really get the communication flowing so we were all on the same page. The thing about inspections is they're very perceptive. Dr. Fritz, you may think something's clean, and I may not think it's clean. And so that's why the school district went with the APA level standards. And APA level 2, just so you know, is the standard that the district chose. So what does APA level 2 mean? It means up to 2 days' worth of dust and debris, and then there's lots of categories. But the core program that the district uses was built around that APA level, which is not something that we created. That's the industry standard, just so you know. So this slide shows the inspection score trends from 2015, the second quarter, which is as much data as I can get when I came in. And then the blue line is the total number of failed inspections in that particular quarter. So obviously we'd want to see those lines diverge, right? As your inspection scores come up, you'd want to see your failed inspections go down. You can see we were trending extremely well there. And then you'll see an uptick here of 15 failed inspections, which is this year primarily driven by the fact that the score was changed from 80 to 85%. Don't have an issue with the 85%, but we're working to make sure that we get everybody above that level. And for those sites that, you know, were covered, we can give you the follow-up inspections on those as well as additional inspections because they have actually scored really well from that initial inspection. The second slide here is just kind of a different geographical representation of that first red line, but this just gives it to you year by year. So the blue line, which is 2015-16, Q1 we were averaging 74%. By the end of the year was around 82%. We're currently at this black line right here. So Q1 we were at 90.37%. As of when the slide was built, we were at 89.5%. And again, these are the core inspection results. These are district inspections. So this data is about 3 weeks old because I was a little too excited to get it done. But right now we're sitting around 90.17% on the custodial side as opposed to that 89.5. So we're holding that 90% fairly consistently there. So this is the second KPI and some historical data on it. These are different time periods, and I don't know if you can read that or not. But these are over different quarters, okay, just to kind of give you some historical perception on how principals or administrative staff or POCs, Dr. Fritz and the team, we agreed to get a solidified POC list, and we did get that, and that's definitely helped with our response rate on report cards. But we asked them to provide feedback on an A, B, C, D, F scale, just like they would on a report card, and these are the percentages based on that feedback. So this data here, the only difference really between this and what Greg showed you for February, which is February only, is the response rate here, again, is around 69%. We were up in the almost 90% range for the February data. So we did automate the report cards. Typically, it was a paper process. Didn't seem to work so well. So now it's all automated. They get a survey link. They go out, and they score us, and it takes literally less than 5 minutes for that to happen. And then they have a free form field where they can put in whatever comments they want. We ask questions like, did we follow up on your concerns from your last report card? Are you the facility point of contact? Because it's important to know who's scoring you, right? We ask if lead custodians are communicating with you frequently. Do you know who your manager is? Is your manager communicating with you frequently? And we track all these trends to make sure we're on point with the communication piece. So I just threw two lines up there, the old APA level target, which was 80%, and the new APA target, which is 85% now, just to give you a little bit of perspective. This is the third KPI, so this is what we call SITE. These are our inspections that we do internally, and to give you some historical data, those have been coming in really, really, really close. Believe it or not, these are all different data set points. I didn't just copy and paste this across the PowerPoint presentation. That's how close they are. And more interestingly, you know, we did 1,221 inspections since September through January. So we're doing a high volume number of inspections internally. But when you look at all of them side by side, because we want to see if there's a huge disconnect, You'll see the core district inspection scores are coming in at 89.5, which is the district measurement. Report cards are coming in at 88.9%, and our site inspections are 89.9%. So all fairly close. So that tells me, although I agree there are areas that we need to continue to improve on, but overall as a district whole, we're all in line in terms of the perceptiveness of cleanliness and whether we're meeting the contractual obligations or not. And then the final three slides, I won't go over these in detail, but I wanted to let you know, since the inception of, since 2017 through now, because I know you all are very particular about your own schools, right? I wanted to let you know what that 3 year looks like all in. So anything below 90%, I highlight as a risk site, and we focus on those heavily. So we do have high-risk sites that we've done a lot in, you know, increased pay rates, done a lot of unique things that are definitely making improvements, but there's always going to be improvement to make, and we just want to make sure we keep going forward with that. And then the final slide is, I know there was a question. So those are the KPIs on quality. Then a question came up about consumables, so I wanted to give some historical data on the supplies that we order, and I didn't give you information on chemicals and those types of things. Otherwise, this graph would have been unreadable because we use a lot of stuff. But the consumables, I wanted to let you know, because I know there's questions every now and then about ABM's running out of supplies. Well, in my tenure here, we've never run out of supplies. I just have simply not let that happen. But these give you the run rates here in terms of bag liners that we used, which is fairly consistent on that particular bag size. For this bag size, it's fairly consistent as well. And then obviously our larger bag liners, which we use in the cafeterias and those types of things. Kleenex is really, really, really close. We do order Kleenex in, and we can get Kleenex to the schools. Paper towels, you can't really see it, but that's actually on an upswing. Don't really know what's driving that trend. All I know is that we've, whether it's shrink or vandalism or whatever it may be, paper towels are on the increase. Even though we did do a paper towel change, but I don't think that has really anything to do with it, to be honest with you. Soap is on the increase. Again, is that shrink? Is that vandalism? We do see a lot of vandalism with soap. And then toilet paper, there's actually a downswing on toilet paper, but that did make sense to me, and the reason being is in 2019, we were using a toilet paper that had a core similar to what you would use at home, and we moved to a coreless roll. So now all that space that was just generally empty space is now toilet paper. So you get a lot more usage out of that. So the price point is higher, but we're getting a longer use out of that particular roll. So we have to order lower cases, but financially it's about in line with where we've always been. And that's a review of the KPIs.
So I want to remind the board that in the end of April, we will be doing a workshop, doing a cost comparison between in-house, when we had it back in-house with our own custodians, and the current outsourcing that we have with ABM currently right now, and doing a history review of that. So look forward to that in the end of April. And now we're open for questions.
Yes, go ahead, Ms. Haynes.
Okay, so looking at slide number 9, what confused me is, and I'm just going to point out one school. Mm-hmm. You have Woodward Elementary under Area 7 as well as having it under Area 8, and yet the scores are different. Like your current averages. So I'm confused why some schools are in more than one area, and then their scores are different depending on which.
So it's dependent on – so when we first came in, we tried to set up the district, right? And sometimes we've had to move some schools, so they've moved from an area to another area. Does that make sense?
No, that makes sense.
Okay.
I just don't know why then you would put
– It's just the way that the data – I'm sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt. The way the data is set up on the Excel file, when you pivot it out, it – When you do a pivot, it's looking for that specific column on what area it was assigned to for that data point. But I could certainly go back and change all that to.
Well, because it happens throughout the chart.
Yes.
You know, because even in Area 7 and Area 8, you know, you've got Citrus Grove in each of those columns, and Citrus Grove has different scores. So which score is truly the accurate score of, you know, how you're rating the services?
Yeah, we would have to combine both of those percentages.
I'm not sure. I want
Go ahead.
On slide number six, so it says 88 inspections were completed this year, or compared, you know, for that time period, compared to the 133 last year. So we have a 33% reduction. I'm not sure on inspections we want a reduction. Don't we really want inspections happening so that we can ensure that our students and teachers are in clean environments?
Yes, so I can answer that one. We're in our third quarter currently right now. We have not finished this school year yet, so we do four cycles of inspections. We're in the third cycle. That data is showing you the current year, where we are today, and compared to last year and those type of things. So I think these data points are, we can compare it back to 2017 all the way back through and show you the trend that we currently have today. We're only in the third quarter right now. We're not quite done with the third quarter today. And I don't know what, Brandon, if you want to add some more into there, but that's some of these data that we're looking at as well.
Yeah, I mean, I know the inspectors are a little bit behind, but their intent is to make that up. But as of this data point, that's where they were at. So it doesn't mean in the long run that they're not going to get the number done that they would typically in the school year.
So are these the in-house inspectors?
Yes.
So we have two in-house inspectors.
And we were down to one for about a month until we hired a new one. So we had one inspector, and that's why we're a little bit behind on our inspections.
So these two in-house inspectors, do they work for ABM?
They work for us, directly for us.
And so their entire days are just to go and inspect schools?
And re-inspect, that is correct. So if a school fails, then the other inspector inspects that school that failed, so we don't have the same inspector going back in.
Do they work eight-hour days?
They do. Mm-hmm. And when you look at a campus, the size, and we do sampling, and I know Mr. Cologne has actually accompanied me on several inspections, and Ms. Cuthbert as well. If you would like to do that, we can show you exactly how we go through that and how we rate the campuses and what they do for samplings.
I think I really need to understand your scoring.
Sure.
For how we have an 89.5%. Because I'm out in all my campuses, and I don't know that I'd have an 89.5%. Sure.
So in April, during the board presentation, I will explain in detail what APA Level 2 is, what it looks like, how our core inspects that area, and how we do the inspections, and how we come up with that percentage in detail for you. And I can share it to you beforehand if you wish. But
Linda? Carl, go ahead.
Thank you. Greg, what I'd like to see in April, sure, if you could, for instance, just pick a school. And I would like to just see what that school's score has been like every year.
Sure.
Okay. And the reason, the obvious reason for asking that is, mm-hmm, I could see how any school, any year, could just have a bad year because of staff turnover and, mm-hmm, issues, but it just seems like you wouldn't want the same school to have a bad year every year, you know, 3 years in a row. I mean, that's just way too long. So just want to be able to see that if we could.
Yep, we'll do.
And I understand certainly about, and I can concur with the bar being raised to 85 now, mm-hmm, you said,
yes,
compared,
sir,
to 80. That's what I'd like to see.
Yes, sir.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Excuse me before we move on. Mr. Persis, what data did you ask for them to disaggregate?
Well, I would just like to see each
by school.
Each school's, okay, year after year
report,
because we're seeing the cumulative average.
Yeah. We'll break it down by school.
Yeah, okay. I've actually got that available. I can have it to you in 10 minutes because I look at the – it's a long graph. But
I know.
Can,
it's huge.
Okay.
Okay. It's huge.
I've got it.
Mr. Cologne?
And there is one other school besides the Mainland is on here twice, too.
Yeah.
There's a lot of them. I was just pointing
out
a few of them that are in
one. Yeah, I'll go back and combine all those. It's just simply when we're trying to balance the areas out for the area managers, we would move some schools around, and so their data points are in two different areas at that particular point.
and I get that, but maybe where you have, if Mainland, that was a school in 2017, can you show us again what area they were in 2017, 2018,
yes.
2019? Because that'll be helpful. So yes. We'll know what area they're in now.
Yes, every single okay. school. Yep.
Cool. Mr. Colon?
All right. So thank you for the information. And so I'm actually going to turn over to my colleagues here. Having done several of these inspections at 6 o'clock in the morning, which I'm excited to do some more, but it got to the point, and again, I'm speaking to my colleagues here. Mm-hmm. I appreciate the data. I think we're finding holes in this data already, number one. You asked how does the inspection actually work, and so this was my experience. We went to New Smyrna High, 6 o'clock in the morning. That day, the garbage wasn't picked up. That day, there was toilet paper. It was, I'm not even going to go there. It was dirty. And so at the time, what I learned was your high dusting and your garbage being thrown out, each counted as one. And so they do a percentage of the school. And so my comment after having done several of these is because they do a percentage of the school, so let's say they walk 5% of the school, you literally would need to have a bomb drop in the middle of the courtyard, okay, for that school to reach, at the time it was 80%, I believe. And so a school that didn't have the garbage picked up, that didn't have toilet paper in the bathroom, that had remnants left, okay, passed. Recently, we visited with Commissioner Cochran at Westside. It was disgusting. It was embarrassing. It was gross. It was embarrassing that we didn't take that. You know what? I'll go even further back. It was actually a good thing because it goes to show what we have for our children. They didn't put on a show. It was dirty. And it was really embarrassing because Superintendent Fritz hadn't even started yet, and he was there. And so I sent Greg a picture of that. It was disgusting. And so with that being said, I think that, you know, APA level 1, 2, 3, 4, 12, our schools are dirty. My Reuben, and it goes back, and you're absolutely right. It's in the eye. Everybody sees clean as different. And so for Reuben, our schools are dirty. When I do an inspection and it's pointed out that every teacher has a dustpan and a broom and cleaning supplies in their classroom because the classrooms don't get cleaned, or the teacher that's outside of the girls' bathroom has rolls of toilet paper because it's not uncommon for there to be no toilet paper, that's a problem. When I see these numbers and I see that our principals reported this way, I am not a fan of surveys, and I can tell you we don't want to ask our teachers what they think. Because if we ask them, because they're the ones that have every single day to, and, you know, I think that we've got some great folks in our schools, and it'd be interesting, you know, for our principals, it's hard to tell, you know, you're calling out your custodian. That's hard. It's hard to say, you know what, my school's dirty, when you know they're working hard, when they're understaffed. Pine Ridge, you know, I'm not going to say that out loud. So Pine Ridge is disgusting. It was. And so I said when I first started and we did the tour, I said, I want our schools to be a place where kids learn and want to learn and play. It has to be pretty. It has to be clean. And I walked out of that meeting because I said, obviously, clean is subjective. And so I welcome the conversation in April. I welcome, because I know that there are clauses, I welcome the conversation, but I would challenge to say that right now we are not saving one penny because our schools are dirty. And so again, this is something that we started to talk about early on, and then other priorities came into place. But, I mean, kids are kids. Kids are going to be, I'll never forget, we went for Michael Waltz did his event at, where were we?
Spruce Creek.
At Spruce Creek. And we walked up to the school. It was a Saturday afternoon, and there were lunch trays all over the front of the school. It was embarrassing. I joined Polk County, Polk Pasco, one of them, came to visit our CTE program. It was 8:30 in the morning. There were lunch trays on the stairwell. It was embarrassing. And we're talking about, 12, 16 hours later. And so I look forward to the conversation, Greg. You ask, and I've asked my principals, are your schools clean? They'll tell you yes. Then you ask them, was it better when these folks were in-house? Oh, hands down. And so this is coming from someone who wasn't a part of the initial conversation and who's done probably four of these 6 a.m. inspections. When I have to say, hey, I've got flu at a school, let's make sure we wipe the surfaces, because there was not one, actually, sorry, I take that back, Freedom? No, which is the one in Lake Helen?
Volusia Pines?
Volusia Pines was the only school that I found that we found that it was like, wow. And, kudos to the custodial staff there. A lot of our schools that are doing great are because the folks that are there were the ones who were there before. And so, again, I'm not speaking to the data. I just look forward to the conversation in April.
Okay.
Thank you.
And then I continue.
Can I ask you a couple of questions? What is in your contract?
Yep.
Do you pressure wash?
So pressure washing specifically listed under the summer activities. It's listed as periodic, but we do pressure washing throughout the year.
Okay, do you pressure wash at least once a week outdoor cafeteria areas?
No.
A lot of our schools.
No, we do not.
So who cleans the picnic tables outside that are hardwired, or the floors where there's food, or even at New Smyrna High School, I've been there, where kids have thrown food on the columns in between the auditorium, so nobody cleans them.
No, when we notice it, we'll go in and pressure wash, or we have that request come in. I mean, I've actually worked with University High School, because it's constant milk. We'll pressure wash it, and then 2 days later, it's completely stained again. So we were actually out there today staging 35 additional 55-gallon garbage cans to hopefully get students to empty their trays actually in the garbage cans. So it's not that we ignore it. When we see it, we will typically be on it right away. Or if there's even a request that comes from the administrative staff. But I know, we've had requests to pressure wash every single day, and we do not. We don't pressure wash every day. Now, if there's a spill, like outside of a cafeteria, if there's a bag that was being carried and had a leak in it, the custodial staff should be flushing that down or washing it down so it doesn't stain.
There's been a stain out on the walkway in front of Reed Patillo for a long time.
Yeah.
And obviously nobody has looked in that direction, even though teachers have said that stain is there, and it is a chocolate milk stain. We have a lot of outdoor eating because the state law says we can only have so much square footage in our cafeterias because it's not used 90% of the time. Deltona Middle, I know Spruce Creek High School are both very overcrowded. Kids are all over the schools eating. I see brooms being used. I don't see mops being used. And I don't see the pressure washing. There's food all over the place, and it's stuck, and it's been, the sun gets on it. We get ants, then we get termites. Kids get, ill. Why do you wait for a request from the school campus to pressure wash? I mean, you only pressure wash when there's a request?
No. When we notice it, we will pressure wash it, but that's not an activity that we do every single day. So in the conversations that we had with the district, we actually, spoke about what would it look like if we were to do a pressure wash person every single day.
Okay. Is there a way that you would commit to doing it at least once a week?
We could have those conversations, yes.
custodians have vacuum cleaners.
Yes.
I've never seen one with a vacuum pack. And when I visit schools, I've never seen one with a vacuum cleaner. A lot of the we're rebuilding our schools. We have two beautiful new schools at Pearson Elementary as well as at Chisholm. We're going to have another one at George Marks Elementary on the west side. We would really like to keep those schools pristine. It's easy to keep a new school clean, but as I noticed on a slide where New Smyrna Middle has an 85% rating. Let's see, where are they? I think it's slide 8. It's 85.6 in Area 4. It's the lowest. Coronado Beach Elementary, very small school, at 94. I can understand 94.9. Do you commit more energies to the larger, more crowded, older schools?
You know, absolutely. So when we talk about New Smyrna Middle, and that's a good example, when inspectors go in and do core inspections, for example, you have a set of buildings in the back that are inundated with terrible mastic, which is what keeps the VCT on the floor, and it's a water-based mastic. So anytime you refinish that floor, you're always going to get water penetration in there. So every time, you know, 2 weeks after a floor has been finished, that mastic starts to bleed through. The inspectors are making note of that on their inspections. When there's nothing that's below the wax, that's something that really needs to be addressed from a facility standpoint. And then, you know, there's baseboards and those types of things as well. So, you know, Craig and I and the team have, you know, we've tried to find out the best way to score all this, but also capture those as well, because we want to partner in terms of, you know, what's custodial versus facility. But if your inspector's in there, we got to find a way to report that, right? If there's an issue, so we're working through that as well. I don't know if that helps answer your question or not, but
not totally.
Okay,
I understand what you're trying to say. I think what really hurts a school is when some workers, for example, maybe three workers would be committed to a particular school, mm-hmm. but two of those workers are transferred to another school that evening, leaving one person to do all the work.
Right.
Because either somebody hasn't shown up or there's a visitor coming to another school for that morning. It's making it very difficult on your employees. I know a lot of your employees. A lot of them are local mm-hmm. Kids who have gone to our schools. I've had some former colleagues who in retirement want to pick up an odd job. And I know you demand a great deal from your workers with not a whole lot of pay and no benefits. I know you're not giving overtime. I know all that extra work has to be done within 8 hours. It's very difficult. As a school district, we try to value all of our employees, and we understand you are one of our vendors. We understand that. But we feel very closely associated with those custodians because we want them to care for our campuses. They, too, see what they can't get done because either some workers didn't show up, some are ill, or else they just can't get the whole campus done at night. So my heart cries out for your workers. Your groundskeepers, we were at Terry T. Small the other day. It looked very nice. We could tell your grounds crew were there recently. There was fresh mulch. The grounds were edged. But when I asked the area, one of the assistant principals, I said, "Aren't you glad this is great?" She says, "It's sad that we had to have Good Morning America show up in order to get our grounds in pristine condition." And I said, "Well, how did everything go?" She said, "The mowing was all over the place. It got all over their cars in the parking lot. The AP went up to one of the gentlemen who did the mowing because he was blowing all the grass away from the road and it was going onto the cars." And she says, "Well, can't you blow some of that off the cars that you put on there?" He says, "We don't do that." And walked away. Those little things, I guess, have a bitter pill. As we try to, we are concentrating on learning and our students and safety and security in our campuses. We're not supposed to have to always contact you for tissue paper, which a lot of times New Smyrna Beach High School does not receive. We're not supposed to have the onus upon us to constantly request. We hired you to take care of the cleaning for us. The safety and the security is very, very important to this school district. And when I spent 2.5 hours at Reed Patillo, January 2nd or 3rd, and I saw in the media center a full garbage can full of Christmas partying. They had I guess, a celebration after school, and it was still sitting there all open in the media center. It had been there for 2 weeks. So, and I also noticed on your slide 4, I saw from the orange, the dark orange to the lighter orange to the yellowish, that goes from like almost a year ago to what's happening just recently, and there's not much difference. I don't see an improvement where anything is moving in a positive direction. And when you look at the restrooms and the classrooms, those are the two most important places. We're supposed to be clean. That is unacceptable. 87 is not acceptable, especially when we're dealing with almost a pandemic going on right now. We don't know where our flu or any, or I don't even know how to pronounce the carnivorous.
Corona.
Thank you. My daughter's the medical person. We have to make sure everything is as safe as possible. When I worked with the Cuda Cafe during school lunch week, I walked the Cuda Cafe attendants had to go out and clean the tables. So they're doing that, plus trying to get the kitchen ready, and then plus getting another lunch together. That's what, 20 minutes separates those lunches. I mean, I helped them. And it was a lot of cleaning and a lot of surfacing. And I also watched ABM come in and try very quickly in the 20 minutes to clean up the messes. There's a lot of sweeping going on, but the chocolate milk, the milk that was dripped, was not cleaned up. So you have another group coming in and stepping in all of that, making it a lot worse. It would be nice to have a bucket and a mop just to pick up those areas. When you clean hallways, you use one of those big buffer machines?
Yes, ma'am, an auto scrubber. Yep.
When you go from, for example, Creekside Middle School has three separate buildings, building for 6th grade, 7th grade, and 8th grade, do you have your operator change the water as you go from hallway to hallway to hallway?
So those are large capacity machines. They have a T5 over there, so there's no need to change that water. It'll stop dropping water. So the clean water and the fresh water are housed separately in the machine.
So could I imagine that the 6th grade, if they get their hallways cleaned first, those hallways are a little bit cleaner than the 7th?
No.
8th grade?
No. It's fresh water comes out of the fresh water tank only, and then the dirty water sucked up into a separate tank. So
it's all on one machine?
It's all on one machine, yep.
Okay. How often do you clean the walls?
So if we have a Kyvac available on site, we typically like to use those every single day in the restrooms.
Okay.
So restrooms are what they would call APA Level 1 standard, which is gleaming, right? So just so you know, that those are held to a different standard as opposed to other areas.
Okay. And you realize that kindergarten and pre-K rooms have a different standard of cleanliness than fourth grade classrooms, correct?
Not via APA Level 2, they don't. So, and I don't, please don't misinterpret. I'm not disagreeing with any of your comments. You know, for example, you know, wiping of the tables. The contract is specifically written that is not, custodians are not to do that. So.
Well, that's why I said that.
Yeah.
People did it, but I was just verifying. I went out to do it, so I could also see your gentleman working. Let's see. On slide 5,
mm-hmm.
Number 2, the 89.80%, from April through August. Doesn't that reflect summer break?
Yeah, but we still do site inspections during that time frame.
But isn't that when all the deep cleaning occurs? So wouldn't that be typically higher? Because there are no students on campus.
No, because we're doing it from April through. It's not like we're doing it at the end of summer. We're doing it through that entire time frame. So, no, I don't believe
well,
it would.
I would think that
now, if we
June, July would have brought that percentage up. And then when we go to a 920 to 120, there's Christmas break in there, and we're off a whole week of Thanksgiving as well.
Mm-hmm.
So do your workers work during those breaks?
Yes.
Because when I was at Reed Patillo, not much was done.
Mm-hmm.
Do you do windowsills or do you clean blinds?
Blinds are supposed to be done one time, I think, annually. I'd have to look at the contract, but I think it's annually.
I've never seen you guys do it.
Okay.
There's so much caked on blinds right now, you can't get it off. You have to get a cleaner. You can't dust them anymore. What about windowsills?
Yes.
I've never seen the windowsills that I've seen. I put my hand on it, and it's filthy.
Okay. And those are part of the core. That's some of the core inspection categories as well, and I know we'll go through the workshop to show that.
I just want to say the company you bought out, GCA, did a much better job than ABM. I can't tell you how disappointed I am with your service. I think you have some marvelous employees. Some of them are extremely hard workers. I'm sure a few others are not. But there was one worker that we had at New Smyrna High for 20 years.
Mm-hmm.
She left. She just couldn't take the low pay anymore. She was offered a little higher pay plus benefits, which let her move. But because of her pay, she lived with her daughter and grandchildren. So when she left, she took her grandchildren with her, and the charter school she now has a job with, we lost two students. So we lost two students FTE. It does have ramifications. When we have visitors, we have people who live. When I was in my classroom, that was my home from 7 a.m. and sometimes till 5 o'clock at night. We deserve to have cleanliness and have the equipment that we purchase, the tile, the desks, the walls that we have, they need to be sand-free and they need to be clean. So I think I'm speaking for a lot of people who have to beg your company for tissue, and I understand the mischievousness of high school students and middle school students who want to stick toilet paper down toilets. They shouldn't do it. They shouldn't put food up on ceilings or on the walls either. But we also have to realize we're working with kids who think they, you know, they're away from home, they can get away with all kinds of stuff. But we need to be a little more. When we call you, you're very receptive. But we shouldn't have to call you. Honest to goodness, you should see it and take care of it. That's why we hired you. And that's why I have asked the superintendent to start investigating to see if we can start going back to our own employees. Because I feel that we as a district cannot depend on you all the time. And if there's any kind of conversation I have with employees, parents, business leaders, it's I think 45% of the time, almost half the time, it's about the cleanliness of the and it's, I'm sorry, but we're trying to be very realistic with you.
We
don't know what we're doing wrong. We don't know how to be better. So I do appreciate you coming. Your shoulders are a little bigger. They're a little broader right now. All the weight you have on them right now. So we, at least for me, we encourage you to please do better. Don't, because we have so much to do.
Mm-hmm.
Our kids demand so much of our time. We shouldn't have to turn around and say, where's the toilet paper? Where's the tissue? Why wasn't my garbage can picked up? And a teacher shouldn't have to put a sign outside her classroom door after 2 days of not having the garbage picked up. Please pick up my garbage tonight. And then she returns the next day and the garbage still hasn't been picked up. So we hope for a New Year's resolution. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Anybody else? Okay. And so I'm not going to belabor the issue. My concern is early in the morning, even the school is clean. By lunchtime, most campuses are filthy. And I thought we had day porters there and people during the day to help maintain the cleanliness of the school, or at least restock the paper, the toilet paper and paper towels. So if we do not, our directive to our team is make it happen. Our schools during the middle of the day should not run out of the essentials such as paper towels and toilet paper.
We have a day porter at all of our campuses,
okay.
And some have a day and a half, so larger schools. I've asked all administrative staff to start walking the restroom areas. We've had several issues in restrooms here lately where things are being broken, so we want them to look at that. If there is anything missing, to give the day porter to fill those back up. We do hear you, and we're working towards that.
If nothing else, anything else, Superintendent?
I just have a question, if that's all right, because I'm new to the process. I want to make sure when supplies are lacking, is there a closet? I recognize that the supplies are not ours, but is there some place on each campus where that day porter can go refill? I know that I've fielded several emails about soap and toilet paper over the last month.
Yeah, so there's a main receiving room at every school where that's normally all housed at. Now, they may, you know, separate that and put that in the individual closets. But if there's ever a question or somebody, for whatever reason, can't find something, I mean, we've got nine managers in vehicles. I know you say you don't want to have to call us to get it. 99% of the time, there's product there. We had an example come across from a school where they said there's no soap in the bathrooms, and every single one of the bathrooms had soap. So I'm not discounting your comments. We want the best as well. We really do want the best for the students as well. And I think we have a great partnership with the school district. And obviously there's improvements to be made. But a lot of times there's some misperception or misnomer out there. And I know we can get into that in a little more detail in April. But we have plenty of supplies. One thing, if I walk away from this table, is I want everybody to know we have never run out of supplies. You're more than welcome to come visit the Deltona warehouses where we're housed out of. We get shipment twice a month, sometimes three times a month, and I mean, by the pallet. So we always have supplies.
Okay, Jamie, then.
Okay, so you just said there's nine managers that, if need be, can go to a school. So I guess what I need to understand right now is I would like to know the number of custodians we actually have
mm-hmm.
on each campus,
mm-hmm.
whether they're the daytime or the afternoon, evening. But I want to know how many staff members that you're paying salaries of that aren't even working at a school. You know, like you said, you have nine managers. So nine managers driving around or sitting at the Deltona warehouse hub or whatever. Why? Why do we need nine people?
Well, each one of those managers has 8 to 10 schools that they support.
And so they're on those campuses every day, or are they sitting in an office?
Yes. No, they're not sitting in an office. They're in the truck, visiting the POCs, doing facility feedback forms, talking with custodians, doing quality checks, doing the site inspections. We have a lot of contact in the schools.
Then I was trying to be very politically correct since I went first. But the honest truth is, just as my colleagues, we are out in these schools every day. And I know that Ms. Cuthbert has talked a lot about the high school and middle school level. I'm telling you right now, it's absolutely disgusting to go into elementary classrooms where teachers are going to do activities on carpet. That I'm telling you right now, I don't want to see those little kids sitting on that carpet because it's filthy. And I mean, I can speak about the high schools too. University High happens to be in the district that I represent. And I spent 4 hours out there one day walking that entire campus, and I just had to watch everywhere that I took a step that I wasn't stepping in something, which is just crazy. But, you know, I brought up Woodward to start with on your chart because you had it in two different columns with two different scores. Woodward's filthy. And it's not on those teachers. Those teachers, I'm sorry, their job is to instruct and to have a safe, clean learning environment for those children. And, you know, my advice to you would be maybe your nine people need to, you know, if they've got eight schools, 4 days a week they need to be at a different school helping clean it if that's what it's going to take instead of just driving around looking at stuff. Because I am going to go out and see how your scoring's done, but I don't think your scoring's going to impress me in any way at all. I think you're scoring yourself a lot higher than what I would score you for, you know, cleanliness, because it's not clean. I mean, I walk into classrooms and touch the table and pick up my hand, and my hand's black. And that's not on the teachers. Like, we can't just keep, but I'm telling you, there are teachers in this district right now that are bringing in Lysol wipes. They are bringing in mops and brooms and dustpans, and some of them even have vacuums in their room that they've went and bought, and they are spending their time cleaning their room instead of preparing for lessons and putting their curriculum materials together. So I'm absolutely not pleased at all, and I was trying to be kind at the beginning, but I'm over it.
Ms. Cuthbert?
As we are rebuilding some of our elementary schools, we want to make sure students stay in their classrooms, so we are going to the expense of having bathrooms very accessible to those students. Some bathrooms are individual in individual classes. Others can join two classrooms together. We would like to have those bathrooms clean. That takes time to do the floor and the toilet all the time. I think the time that you have assigned jobs, I don't think that's enough. And I don't know what your industry standard is, but to cover what they are supposed to cover in a day, it's just not enough time. And second of all, I do have a personal request. I would like New Smyrna to have a couple of cases of tissues, of Kleenex tissue.
Oh, absolutely.
You're talking about high school?
Yes. Yes, she's been begging since September to have sufficient. She hoards it. She keeps it in a locked closet. She hands it out when it's absolutely necessary. But it's been an ongoing email issue for a very long time. And as the job she has, she shouldn't have to be begging for Kleenex tissue. Thank you.
Okay. Colleagues. Mr. Persis, go ahead.
I don't know about you, Dr. Fritz, but, you know, this is bringing back memories for me when I was a principal and we had it in-house. And I think we flipped over in 2012 or 13.
12.
The first, yeah,
the
12 to 13
year.
Or 13, 14 years. And so I just want to say that when we had it in-house, it wasn't perfect. I'm not trying to say that what they're doing is a great job. I'm not trying to defend anything, and I certainly agree with everything everybody has said. But one of the areas where I got the most heartburn all the time was from teachers reporting this wasn't clean, or why can't we pressure wash, and why can't we do that? Well, we didn't have the supplies. We only pressure washed. Maybe we could do it once every 6 weeks. When can we get the rugs clean? Only during a break. Winter break, spring break, summertime. I mean, I don't want anyone to think that no matter, this business is tough business and you don't get the cream of the crop employee that wants to clean toilets and clean cafeteria. It was contracted. So the employees couldn't do certain things. Being in the cafeteria was rough. You had one custodian there during the daytime, one, and you had elementary school with kids, you know, getting sick here. Teacher wants them there. Poor person was just like running around crazy. I mean, it's a tough job. It's just a tough job to please so many people. And I'm not saying that it can't be done. And I had some great teams at some schools, and I had some not-so-great teams, and you hear about it, and I heard about it from parents. I heard about it from teachers. You just keep trying, but it was a battle that principals had with the district staff who was overseeing the in-house custodial operation, because the principals kept wanting more staff, number one. We kept wanting more equipment so that they could do the job. We kept wanting more and more and more, and we were always told, no, 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 we have a budget, and you got to operate within your budget. I remember fighting for toilet paper, fighting for paper towels, fighting for soap. And so just like we don't want to fight about it and the teachers don't, the principals don't want to fight about it either. There's too many other things that are going on in our schools right now. And the whole concept was that we'd outsource it to take this burden off of the principals, and that it would be hired, you know, controlled by like Greg or somebody else, and they would have a managing staff, and they would take care of all these things. But unfortunately, it isn't being done to the level that we all want. At least it's not being done consistently at every school. As you pointed out, Ms. Cuthbert, it is good at some schools, but at some schools, and that's why I ask, you know, are there some schools where it has been less than what we would all like year after year, after day, month after month? You know, why isn't it getting better? So I'll be real interested to see what we come up with in April. But I just had to point out, because when we're all just saying, you know, that, oh, I wish we could go back in the old days, and these principals who said, I wish we could go back to the old days, I don't think we have 10 principals here that were principals eight years ago who even remember what it was like. And even if what it was like at, I was principal at six schools. I can't say all six were the same. I can't even say all six were the same from year to year. I mean, you just can't generalize in this thing. So it's just very, very tough. But I think what we're all saying is, you guys got to do a better job. That's what we're saying.
If I may add one thing, we've spoken about this, and it's very recently. It'd be interesting to see inspection scores versus age of facility. And the reason I bring that up is Pearson is a good example. You know, at the old Pearson site, it was constantly a cleanliness struggle. And, you know, they had a new site built, and they've consistent. We haven't changed one thing. We haven't changed process, custodial staff, any of that stuff, and they consistently score in the 96th percentile. So I think it would be beneficial to look at that to see if there's any correlation.
Okay. Anything else, Superintendent?
No, we've got our marching orders.
Okay. Thank you very much for your time.
Thank you.
I appreciate it.
Thank you.
Moving down to item 1801, Superintendent Fritz, job description.
I'm going to do most of the talking, but I am going to ask Mr. West to come forward as we get started on this. But, you know, Board, as we started having great conversations about strategic, Mr. West, did you hear that come forward? Thank you. Okay. As we start talking about our structure, and when I have these focus group meetings, the first group I met with, as I remind you, was the principals, and we were able to get all principals in that first week that I was on the job. And as I meet with teachers, it becomes increasingly more obvious to us that equity and acceleration are themes that everybody wants. No matter where you live in Volusia County, we want to make sure that we have the very best, and that when we look at our structure, one of the challenges is the learning community approach. And so as we go forward today, I'm going to be bringing three job descriptions for you, listening to those folks on the front line to help us build a strategic plan. It makes sense to have a leveled approach so that you have an elementary specialist supervising elementary principals and the work that's being done in elementary, the same for middle and the same for high. So three of the job descriptions we're bringing forward are an assistant superintendent for elementary, an assistant superintendent for middle, and an assistant superintendent for high school. The fourth one, and it very much is related to the work that we're going to ask at least be a part, our new appointment with the Director of Safety and Security. It's the social-emotional well-being of our children. And I got to tell you that we can't forget that. That is something that even today when we talked about the importance of moving forward, I think Ms. Cuthbert said it, that we have to pay attention to that. And so that's an area of a hole that right now in our organization we have bits and pieces. We have wonderful people that are really caring for our children, but we need a division that really owns that, including the student discipline, the proactive approach with restorative justice and PBIS. So the last position I'm bringing forward that will really be about that student services piece is the assistant superintendent for student services. And I wanted Mr. West at the table in case you have any questions specifically about the position.
So, colleagues, you had opportunity to review the job descriptions. Are there any questions or comments? Go right ahead, Ms. Haynes.
Okay, so my only question is at the very bottom of each of the job descriptions, where you go into the part all the way to the bottom, where it talks about the position data.
Position data, yes, ma'am.
So it says 255 days, and I'm confused by that because we have moved everyone that is a new employee or by choice to 250 because we closed down for Christmas break mandatorily, and we've been closing down for spring break mandatorily. So if we're putting them at 255 and we're closing down, then they're having to give up 5 leave days because they can't work during those periods. So is there a reason why they're 255 and not 250?
So my understanding is I know we have been transitioning. It goes all the way back from the 260 to the 255 days and then from 255 down to 250 for a number of the positions. The 255-day, my understanding is the 255-day jobs were specifically for those levels that were going to be working during those times. So I will say that
I'll tell you, spring break is actually a work week for the 255. And
correct.
So my thought going forward is my cabinet needs to work when I'm working.
Yes.
It can certainly take leave, but I think you can see that we pushed pretty hard and pretty fast. And so the same with the director that we appointed tonight, they'll have the same director for safety and security will have the same schedule as mine. So that's really why we did it.
Okay, so you're 255.
Yes.
So that's why you're asking, because I was just confused because we've been moving to 250.
Yes.
Yeah.
Correct.
And they were on, if they're at a 250, they're mandatory off during the spring break.
Okay.
So bringing them on board, they can still take it if they earn their days, but I have meetings during spring break. So.
Anybody else? I do have one question. Yep. And the reason I'm asking this question, when we go down to key job requirements and we're looking at the work experience, and we talk about a minimum of 3 years and a successful principal experience required.
Yes, ma'am.
And the reason I'm asking this question, the way our district was formally designed, we took really good assistant principals and brought them to the district level, maybe not giving them an opportunity to really be a principal. And so you could potentially be excluding really good candidates from this, who have been at the district in leadership capacity, but they've never been a principal. And that's concerning to me because it was not of their own doing that they took the position. So are we potentially excluding really good candidates?
This is a little philosophical.
Okay.
So,
yes,
I apologize, but I believe to have straight credibility standing in front of principals, you have had to walk the walk and talk the talk. Part of the conversation earlier, as we appointed Dr. Dyer to Ortona, part of the conversation and guidance that she and I had over the holidays was that was something she was missing. She had been a director, and if she wanted to progress, that was something that I felt like she probably needed to do. And so as she reflected on that, I think Ms. Hazel can tell you that she shared with her similar stories. The belief on us, and not that there aren't people out there that are wonderful, to your point, but as we move this district forward, principals have got to have faith in the people giving them guidance and direction.
Yes.
And so that's why, that's kind of why we made the requirement the way we did.
Okay. And again, I'm fine with that because I take it for this position, they will be evaluating principals.
Right.
Okay.
Yes.
And that's fine.
Yes.
I'm just saying.
Very good, ma'am.
How do we grandfather these people in, though? Or what do we do? Are we going to give the ones that are at the district level that have been in these positions that have supervised principals, who currently supervise principals, are we going to give them an opportunity to go back and be a principal? Or are we going to, because we're not holding them harmless, we're actually harming them from progressing in their academic quest because of something we had in place. It's not something they put in place. Right. It's something the district had in place.
Well, I will say in actually working on these job descriptions, that is a section that we actually put specifically, Dr. Fritz directed me to put specifically in for these job descriptions for exactly that reason. So when we go back and we look at our job descriptions, and we will be looking at all of our job descriptions, I'm just going to tell you right now, and updating those, when we do that, we will take into consideration exactly what you've been talking about, Ms. Wright, because that is a key factor. Yes, ma'am.
And let me say, there are positions at the district that being a principal is not necessarily a requirement.
Right.
Some of the best assessment people I've ever worked with weren't principals, but they were psychometricians, and that was important to be able to move them forward. So I will state that that's not always essential, but when you're going to evaluate and stand in front and guide and do that work, coming from our own principals, that was something important to them.
And I agree. I'm not disagreeing. I'm just saying, though, you've had people that potentially may want to be a principal, but we, as a district, decided to bring them to the district. So now they're out of the loop for this position.
Correct.
And I get it, because they have to evaluate other principals.
Exactly.
But as other positions come about, I think we're being somewhat of a disservice to them if we don't look at the fact that if I've been at the district supervising people for 12 or 15 years, now you're going to tell me I can't apply. I think our goal is to keep good people.
Yes, ma'am.
We don't want them to go to another district.
Right. Agreed. Yes, ma'am.
But I'm fine. I had to ask that question.
Yep.
Okay.
I have a question. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Yes.
The position of Assistant Superintendent for Student Services.
Yes.
Yeah. That's the one that we used to have that person way back when, Student Services. Who would be reporting to this person the way you see it?
I can give you my thoughts.
We haven't got the org chart.
Yeah, right. But obviously as we designed this position, we thought about that. I'll share with you a lot of the folks that reported to Dr. Amy Hall when she was here, the folks in guidance, the folks that are working with student discipline. Mm-hmm. One of the areas that we want to bring forward, and we're going to ask our principals to include, is a secondary in-school suspension person. And so as we worked and talked as a leadership team, what would that be like? We don't want it to always just be a punitive. We want it to be a learning experience. If we're really going to move restorative justice forward, that has to be an area of focus as well. And we have staff members here that are responsible, but what's our problem in our district is they are scattered and separated.
Yeah.
So they're really not in the same shop. And so as we look at this going forward, we have to bring those people together under one leadership and one division. But Dr. Amy Hall's former division is one that would definitely move over. And
so
school psychologists and social workers would be a part of this as well.
Yeah, I figured that part would. And then what about ESC services?
ESC right now, and I think we got to keep it close to the top. That's an area we're trying to improve. I have that reporting to Dr. Balgobin.
Mm-hmm.
And I think I'm going to keep it there because it makes sense because it's an area we're trying to improve.
Yeah, because sometimes that goes into student services too. I've seen it both ways, so I guess you guys just have to figure it out.
Yeah, there's still some moving pieces. Absolutely. Yeah.
Okay, great. I'm real happy to see that we're going to the elementary, middle, high. That's the way we used to do it too, long time ago.
Yep.
And obviously the people that you put in those positions will sort of like be expert specialists in those fields.
Yes.
Elementary, middle school, or high school. I know the middle school folks will love that because they always feel like they're left out. So to have their own assistant superintendent for middle school services, they'll feel like, yay, finally,
just like the middle child.
Yeah, exactly. As you know,
former middle school.
Yes. Any other questions?
Can I ask? And just for transparency reasons,
yes.
Why is it a deputy superintendent position?
It's actually an assistant superintendent position. It's not a deputy superintendent.
And then this person will
report to Dr. Bell?
So they will in a soft report. I'd like to share more philosophy on this. I believe if they're on cabinet, they should be evaluated by the superintendent.
Yes.
So they will be evaluated by me, but Carmen will guide their daily work because I can't do it all. That's why she's here.
Right.
So it'll be a dotted line on the org chart to Carmen.
And it does say if there will report to the superintendent, so it will be they will be a direct report to the superintendent.
Yes, ma'am. And it says that position is level 15?
Yes, correct.
What is that salary?
That salary range?
It's a range, 120 to 130.
I have it right over there if you'll let me run get it real fast. Hold on 1 second.
This is just for the board's knowledge. This is when we started looking for those other positions, and I started doing the comparison of the other four counties in our Central Florida area. That's where we ended up with the level 15.
Okay. How are we? We have, I guess, four new positions. We have, and it's just for transparency.
Yep, sure.
We have Dr. Belgoven, Deputy Superintendent of Teaching, Leading, and Learning. And then we have Student Services Assistant Deputy. We have an Assistant Superintendent Assistant for Safety and Security.
No, that's a director.
Oh, that's a director.
Yes.
Okay. And her salary?
That's out of safety and allocation funds.
Okay. And then we have a new CIO.
New CIO, correct.
And that's a Deputy Superintendent.
Not Deputy, but
Assistant.
Assistant Superintendent.
Assistant Superintendent. Okay.
So, yeah, to
How
give
a... How are we making this cost neutral?
Right. So to give a little context, the assistant superintendent and chief are all on the same level. So that's level 15, which would range from, it's about 111,000 to the maximum is 146. But we don't have anyone near that right now. So when we present our org chart, when Dr. Fritz presents his org chart and the plan that we have moving forward, that's where we're going to see the cost savings for what it is that we need to do. So it is a structure that's going to fall in place to show what it is and how he's going to align what it is that we need to move forward with our strategic plan.
Okay, because...
Yes, ma'am.
This is all going to help serve the people on our campuses.
Yes.
And to have better feedback and communication. This is, you know, streamline the organization.
Correct.
So our teachers can have answers back more readily.
Yes.
Not readily.
Yes. And one of the things we're doing now is we're looking at positions to sunset. And when positions, for example, have been vacated, we're determining whether or not that position is needed. And so that's what we're, as we go through the reorg right now, what we're doing is we're basically collecting those type of positions.
Okay, so Dr. Dyer left, she was director of K-12.
It's not been completed.
And that's being eliminated?
It's not been filled, and we collected the savings back from that one. Dr. Amy Holmes, same thing.
So will we continue to have a director of K-12 curriculum?
No.
No, so that's gone. Okay, and I think that helps. Our public understand, we see these new salaries, and we're going,
right.
Because I remember when Mike Dyer left as our counsel, he was making 120, he was making 120, and he was the general counsel.
General counsel, yes, ma'am.
So, you know, is that salary range somewhat equal with across the board? I mean, I'd hate for...
I believe we did an analysis from our coalition. We looked at some of the salaries from the coalition. So, yes, it is. But I think everybody will get an opportunity to see once the new org chart based on strategic plans presented,
right,
how lean we are going to be at this level.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So, I would suggest that they print out where we are now, mm-hmm, and then look at where we will be August 1st or July.
Okay.
Sure.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
I just wanted to make sure everything was transparent.
No, you're correct.
I want to make sure that we are using our tax dollars the best.
Yes.
And when we go to negotiations in the near future, there is some credibility,
right,
when we say there's money, there's not money, you know, percentage. Mm-hmm. I just want to make sure everything is accountable.
And let me just point out that we're adding four, but we're also eliminating four. And so you're eliminating your three area superintendent positions and the CAO position to add these four. So.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Ms. Haynes?
So actually, I was going to talk about the salary, too. So, and I understand that we're eliminating three area soups. So are current area soups at a level 15?
No, they're at a level 14.
So we're increasing. So yes, we're eliminating those positions. Mm-hmm. To make the new positions, but we're going from a level 14 to a level 15.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. So at this point, we're not saving money. I mean,
you're going to save money with the reorg when we don't bring back those positions like I've talked about. But if we're going to attract talent from the others, we have to be competitive with our other districts, the other districts around us, and right now we're not.
Because, you know, even I think during the interview process, I told you that, you know, my expectation was is that we were going to streamline the district and find some money to save, you know, to put back into, you know, the classrooms. Mm-hmm. Where our students are. And so, you know, I support this as long as we are not increasing the money being spent at the district level.
So I definitely have a target of where we're shooting for as savings from our operations side of the house, teaching and learning and operations. Carmen and Mark are going through that now. We have lots of positions that are actually sunsetting this year. But, you know, as we go forward and we start to look at that, I believe on March 10th we can bring back at least the first phase of the reorg. That's what the team and I are trying to do, and that would include the cabinet and that support and how we're paying for some of those positions.
Well, I just wanted to say that I totally agree that if you want to attract talent, you got to pay them. If we don't pay them, somebody else will, and there goes the talent. I mean, it's the way we live now. It's the world in which we live. Whether you're a sports team or a school district, you if you want the talent, and you pay them, and then they'll come. So I just would say that we need to give the superintendent a chance to get the whole thing in place and see where we are a year from this June and see how we're all operating and if it's, you know, efficient and we're getting our services and the teachers are saying that they're getting the kind of support that they need. I think we'll be fine. And we'll be fine. There isn't one magical way to run a school district, and I think what we're counting on is your expertise to bring the talent in that you think is necessary and then to develop that organizational chart that will just keep it going. And build a bench.
Build the bench with less layers at the district office. There'll be less layers here, I promise.
And so I had after the principal's meeting, I had a principal who is seeking higher education say to me, you know, Ruben, it's really nice to have leaders that we can look up to and say, I want to be like that person one day. And that's a lot of what they got from Carmen and the team in general. And so I think We're shoring up our base, and this is, I describe it as a tree. The base needed help, and so we're shoring up that base so that it can support the other 90, the schools plus departments that exist. But unless you shore up that base, you know, a lot of the, and so the goal is that that base can hold up the rest of the district. And so it's going to require, you know, when we look where we came from, where we're going, it's going to require expertise. It's going to require folks who not only know what they're doing, but have done it before. And that, unfortunately, does not come free. And so I know in organizations like mine, you know, when you advance from one position to the other, congratulations, here's your 5%. You move on to the next position, congratulations, here's your 5%. And it reaches a point where you're doing the work that somebody coming from outside would do for a lot more, but you're stuck at that 5 plus 5 plus 5 plus 5. And so the folks that we're bringing in, I mean, it's evident that they have the experience, and I think that this is what is going to require to bring our district forward. In some cases, I'll argue how much it cost us not to have that person. And so I think we're moving in the right direction, and I'm very sensitive to, we really can't speak of the reorg because, again, there's folks wondering, and I've had conversations, there's folks wondering if I'm going to have a job tomorrow. There's a lot of folks wondering that. And so, again, we're tasked with looking, okay, is what we're doing working? Well, I think a lot of us feel that there's opportunity, and so the only way you can change it is to change it. And so I think that, again, as we have and we set our priorities for the superintendent through the strategic plan, he's going to get his marching orders, and we're going to get there. Yep. And the other thing I'll add, and Dr. Fritz and I have talked about, once we get that shirt up, okay, not only is it support for the teachers, but now we can look at the teachers, the paras. I mean, it's not all about money. Money matters. But when the working conditions are not good, when you're classrooms are dirty and there's no money, that's rough. I mean, you're not even good hearts can you keep that way, because over time they get tired, and I empathize with something Linda said. These teachers are tired. Mm-hmm. They're not tired of giving the lessons. They love giving the lessons. They're tired of having to clean their classrooms. Mm-hmm. They're tired of not having the support. They're tired of calling the district for help and not being able to get it, or that the person who's there is not, and not by their own fault, because everybody here does the best they know how, and the best they know. And I'll say that over and over. We've got amazing people. But in order to get these folks to support, Carl mentioned how many APs and principals haven't even been a principal that long. They need that support to one day want to be the superintendent. You know, when the Ladies League of Voters sent us that saying, hey, how about ladies superintendents? Somebody challenged me and said, Ruben, what's your district doing to raise a female superintendent, okay, from a large district like us who can go get a job at Hillsborough? And the answer was nothing. Mm-hmm. And so we're challenging. So I think from the base to everywhere else, we're going to get there. Thank you.
Okay. All right. With that, do we have any cards for to speak on this issue? No? Okay. Is there a recommendation, Superintendent Fritz?
Yeah, the superintendent recommends approval of the job descriptions for the assistant superintendent for student services, the assistant superintendent for elementary curriculum instruction, the assistant superintendent for middle school curriculum instruction, and the assistant superintendent for high school curriculum instruction.
You've heard the superintendent recommendation. Is there a motion?
So moved.
Second.
The motion has been properly moved and second. Any further discussion? Hearing none. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Those that oppose? Ayes have it, and the motion is carried. Thank you. Moving on to 1802.
Thank you, Barbara.
Uh-huh. Authorization to advertise, Superintendent Fritz.
Yeah, I'd like to bring Mr. Greg Aiken, Chief Operating Officer, forward. We have Ms. Sarah Lee Morrissey, Director for Planning, joining, along with Stacy Manning and Eric Kozelski.
Good evening, Madam Chair, board members. Dr. Fritz, thank you for this opportunity to come forward with this presentation this evening. I'm going to turn this over to Eric in just a few minutes. If you remember, we did present some of this information already. Yeah. So this is going to be kind of short and sweet and to the point, and then we'll answer any questions you may have at the end. Sarah Lee is with me this evening as well to answer some questions, so we're going to turn it over to Eric. Eric?
Thank you for the opportunity to speak with you tonight. Much of this information is going to be familiar, as we talked about at previous workshops. Our first request is the area of Citrus Grove between US 17, State Road 11, and 15A to be moved from Citrus Grove to George Marks. It is highlighted here on your map in black. Currently, at our last count, 189 students reside, or elementary students reside in that area. 133 of those are bus riders. According to our timeline, you can see that district staff and school administration have worked together over the past 18 to 23 months to notify the public of this potential change. As a recap of what we had spoken about previously, moving approximately 175 students as an average over the last 5 years would significantly reduce stress on the capacity at Citrus Grove and not cause negative capacity issues at George Marks. You'll notice that the free and reduced lunch percentages go up at both schools. That has to do with the total number of students remaining at the school compared to the total number of students on free and reduced lunch programs. At the previous workshop, we were asked to prepare how would the grades look with the changes. So what we did is we put the students that are in the area into the grades of the schools, and aside from the English and math having slight differences in their percentages, the grades overall were the same. Our second request is that area of DeBerry Elementary, south of Dirksen Road.
Did you want us to wait and answer questions on Citrus Grove first?
Go ahead and finish.
Okay. That area south of Dirksen Road and east of 1792 in DeBerry, from DeBerry Elementary to Enterprise Elementary. One student could be affected from this change currently. That student is not a bus rider. At the previous workshop, you requested that we look at what this could mean for Enterprise. We did a comparison of different apartment complexes in the area. We found that Integra Landings would be the same style of apartments as Integra 289, also run by the same company. So over the last 5 years, you can see there's not a significant number. There's approximately 20 students coming out of Integra Landings. That would end up being similar to what we can see at Enterprise. Now, those 20 students would only raise the percentage of utilization at those students at Enterprise would be about 87%. If those students actually go to DeBerry, that would increase it well above 100. Staff is recommending that school board advertise or approve the advertisement. We come back in March for the public hearing and the agenda or the approval process, that we grandfather existing students that are rising at fourth and fifth grade at both Citrus Grove and DeBerry Elementary, and that siblings of those grandfathered students could apply for a variance to go to the same school.
Okay. So we'll open it up to questions. So if you have any questions this evening, we can talk about both the recommendations.
Thank you.
Go ahead.
Okay, let's start first with your enrollment demographics before and after for George Marks and Citrus Grove. I have no understanding about how Citrus Grove can be sitting at 69.9% of free and reduced lunch, and George Marks is 67.6%, and we move approximately 189 students out of Citrus Grove, and they both go up in free and reduced lunch.
So what we look at when we start doing the comparison, if you look at the 920 students currently now, when we divide the number of students currently of that 920 that are on free and reduced, it gives us that 69%.
I know how you get the percentage.
Okay, so what it does is the students that are staying there at Citrus Grove raises up that number of free and reduced because we're pulling some out, but the ones that are coming out, 135, it balances out that way when we do the calculation. Both go up.
Interesting.
The N goes down.
I'm sorry?
The N goes down.
Correct.
The,
number,
yeah, the percentage goes up.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Correct.
Linda? Anything?
I noticed that the racial demographic on that same slide, there is some difference. George Marks is going to have a higher percentage of minorities. Is it because of the area, the neighborhood?
The neighborhood is approximately, well, in the 175, the neighborhood is predominantly Hispanic, yes.
When you did your community talking, is the community okay with this?
We had some people who were interested in grandfathering. We had some people who were interested in maintaining their bus service, wherever that may be.
When we offered, the first time we had the meeting in 2018, and we offered families the opportunity to start at George Marks in that following school year, some of them were interested, however, because of transportation dependency, meaning the student bus service that we provide, they did not avail themselves of that, though they were interested. There's a large number of mobile home parks in this area, and that accounts for the higher number of low socioeconomic as well as the Hispanic status.
Okay, and my last question, Madam Chair, and you'll probably be able to know this. The students in this area who went to Citrus Grove, they were eligible for transportation.
Mm-hmm.
Will they be eligible for transportation to go to George Marks?
Yes.
Okay, so that does not change. Thank you.
Now, the area is provided, it's outside the 2 miles of either school, so the entire area is eligible for transportation, but only to the assigned school.
Okay, thank you.
Mr. Colon?
So what other analysis did we do educationally other than just straight up scores? Did we do any other analysis, current performance, anything academic?
I would have to ask Ms. Hazel to come up to speak to that.
Yes.
We worked with digital learning on the academic aspect.
Okay, and then I guess, and I'm okay with that. That was my first question because I remember we specifically spoke about that. The other thing is, what does full look like? And so I'll ask that question again. Because while you may feel that Enterprise is full, the reality is there's probably somewhere around 20-something variances right now from Enterprise to DeBary Elementary.
Mm-hmm.
So if you're telling me I'm going to get 20 kids and we have 20 on variance right now, it's kind of the same argument we had with Pride, where all these kids are already asking for variances and are already going east because it's proximal to them. I still don't know what full looks like at Enterprise. I mean, just because it looks like capacity, does that mean we're going to add portables? How many classrooms do we have available for these students?
Mm-hmm.
What does that look like?
So Enterprise currently has some portables on campus that are not being used. I don't have the exact number in front of me. Sometimes what impacts your point about being full is program. And, for instance, we have pre-K ESE program and or VPK and or other ESE programs that impact the use of space, so that you might have a classroom that by your numbers says you are not full. However, what we've seen over the last, I'd say, 4 years is that we're seeing a higher increase in our ESE student numbers. And so I think the question about is your school full is not as easy to standardize anymore. And I would say that's largely because of what we're seeing happening with our students' needs and the type of programs that we have to offer them.
And so the last time when we had this conversation, that was my question. What does full look like? Because I remember saying that Enterprise is a very old school, mm-hmm. and I can't envision that they've got a lot of space. Again, am I opposed to this? No, I'm not. Actually, I think we don't have a choice because DeBerry is busting at the seams. I beg to question, if you're telling me we're going to get 20 kids and I've got 20-plus kids on variance, again, you know, the variances are not guaranteed, correct? And so if we have to, I mean, we're getting ready to take a whole neighborhood and say, okay, whole neighborhood, you're going to go here because of 20, potentially 20 elementary students, and we already have granted these variances for students to go to a different school. Mind you, they'd be heartbroken. I know that it's very hard for change for students and variances, and that's never anywhere we want to go. But, you know, I wish we would have put a little bit more, and maybe I wasn't clear the last time, but a little bit more information. And so, again, I'll support this because it's the right thing to do, but, you know, I think we'll all learn moving forward. I think we'll all learn moving forward as we have these conversations.
Just for clarifying, so staff and I can go forward, and please jump in if I'm saying the wrong terminology, but are you asking for like a fish capacity for a school, saying a school capacity is at right now 98%, so that they have enough for 2% more wherever we're at? Sometimes schools that are overcrowded can be up to 110%, 120% over, and that's when portables and things like that come into play when we start doing the rezoning. I'm just trying to, so that we can answer the questions that you have, if that's
in
the right direction.
Going based on the response, you know, I said, so what does full look like? And the answer was, well, we have some portables. Those portables are dingy. They haven't been used. There's nobody in there right now. So my question was more on the what, and that's what I asked the last time, because I remember saying, you know, Enterprise is 100 years old. Can they really take these other 20 students? I personally believe it's going to be more than 20 students, but I will respect the numbers and the formula, and all that is good. And so, again, what does full look like? And so as I support this, and again, I do not support it, I think, moving forward, let's make sure that full is good, because I can tell you there's going to be, and so I've just went and looked up, they're advertising this community as a DeBerry Elementary School, which is what is currently zoned at right now. Now, fortunately, Enterprise is an amazing school. They are doing great things, but it's very, very, that's going to change. And so arguably, these kids right now are slated to go to River Springs Middle School, which we're getting ready to build Deltona Middle. And so River Springs is far away as compared to Deltona Middle from where these kids are. So that's, we're going to be talking about that pretty soon as they build these. And, of course, you know, that whole River Springs area is just blowing up. University can't take any more kids, of course. We've got a third of Deltona students over there. So, again, that I guess moving forward, that we make sure that full is conducive to an educational environment that's equal or better than the rest of the students. Because if we're calling it empty because we have portables, I'm sorry. So, anyways, I support it. we're good. I just think that we really, really need to look at that. And again, you know, if I've got that many kids on variances, then we maybe need to. I mean, we're getting ready to move. We're getting ready to map a whole area, arguably for 20 students. You know, we really got to look at that. So that's basically, again, I just want to make sure that full is practical, not just a number, because it's easy to throw a number. The state gives us a number, and we don't like it. You know, they tell us you can only build so big. You know, here's your cafetorium, even though you have a performing arts school. You know, so anyways, that's it. Just want to make sure that we make sure that, you know, we are proactive. That's it.
Ms. Haynes?
Okay, so I want to go back to something that you said at the very beginning. You said there's actually 189 students that reside in, you called it the black or gray area, that will move from Citrus Grove to George Marks, and 133 of them are bus riders. So actually, we're not going to bus all of those children.
Well, they're offered transportation. It's up to the parents whether or not they avail themselves.
Okay. In that 189 students that we're saying are going to move, did you include the multi-VE students that are at Stark? Because I just found out recently by visiting Stark Elementary that multi-VE is moving from Stark to George Marks.
Yeah, the multi-VE children are not part of that 189.
So do we know the number of students that are also going now from Stark to George Marks?
What we know is that there are four units,
right,
four classrooms.
I know there's four units.
Right, and we're working with ESE on that. They're the primary communicators with the faculty and families. So I don't have that student number. We just know the space that they need.
Okay, so we are really moving more than 189 because we're taking 189 out of Citrus Grove to George Marks, and then we're moving four multi-VE units from Stark to George Marks.
Correct.
Okay, because nowhere, you know, I went to the school, and that's how I learned about it, because nowhere in anything that we read did anyone point out that we were also, you know, moving units from Stark. I mean, unless I missed it somewhere, there was no discussion.
And I thought we had brought it up during the workshops.
Yeah. Okay. As far as DeBerry and Enterprise go, you know, I'm kind of with Ruben on this. Ruben, I will say I went and looked up the pricing on those apartments, and it looks like it's going to start out around $1,600 a month is the rent for those apartments. I just wonder, you know, I mean, I helped open DeBerry, and I was at DeBerry when DeBerry was like 1,200 students, and we doubled up. You know, we had 36 kids in kindergarten, first and second grade classrooms that were not built to hold 36, but we had 36 with two teachers, and it's difficult. But I also taught at Enterprise, so I know what the limitations are there. I think we may be back here, you know, this time next year revisiting this, because I don't know that it's just going to be 20 kids. And what I would like to say is those portables behind Enterprise are not in great shape. You know, but I worked in a portable behind Enterprise years ago that when it rained, we had to move to the center of the room because the water ran down the walls. So I don't know what you're going to do with the modulars that are sitting at George Marks when you're finished there, but those are the nicest buildings I have seen. They're actually nicer than what the George Marks classrooms were. So maybe you can move them and switch them out at Enterprise so that we can ensure that our kids go into nice classrooms instead of portables that are not in great shape if we're going to have to make this boundary change. And I understand it because we cannot continue to overcrowd, you know, DeBerry Elementary.
So the portables at George Marks are leased for this contract, and then the two portables that are not being used, if we were going to use those, we would send our maintenance guys in and refurbish all of those to make sure they don't leak on the exterior walls coming into the classroom and flooding the kids.
Anything else, colleagues? Superintendent Prince, you have a recommendation?
I do. I recommend the...
Excuse me. I'm sorry. Did we have any cards? Anyone want to speak? Okay. No. Now we can move forward.
Before I go with the recommendations, we go through this because we're going to have one of the things, Greg, I'm going to mention because you forgot to say it, but as we go forward, we're going to have more rezoning requests coming through because one of the charges was to look at the islands over on the east side and start to move away from that. I'm going to say this to the board because this is important as we go forward. We never have to do a rezoning, but we just have to be prepared for what that means to a school. That may mean extra portables. That may be teachers floating. I can tell you this. There's never been a superintendent nor a planning group that ever wants to come in front of a board or go in front of a group of parents and say we have to rezone because it's never popular. But if, as we start to look at our buildings and looking at that, and that's one of the challenges that Greg and I have talked about, being as proactive as we can so we can move as few times as we have to. But, you know, we get surprised occasionally. We get surprised by a piece of property that's sold and someone buys it and erects an apartment. And so that happens all the time. But one of the things I think coming forward, Greg, I'm going to ask that we do before I go for the approval, is ask that we give a fish report to the board.
Sure.
That we give them capacity by school, the percentages of where they're at so that they understand that and what that means, not just the number. What is the industry recommendation from the state of Florida based on the school? Where should we be and where should we be looking? Another thing I've asked Greg to do is analyze our portables out in our sites.
Yep.
If they're junk and we have them hooked to electricity and we're not using them, we should stop. We should absolutely stop doing that. And so we got to maybe potentially start working our way out of the portable business. And so that'll be something. In fact, I don't. Whenever you have that, Greg, I think we could share that with the board. Okay.
I think we.
I'll go forward with the recommendation.
Yes.
Yes. The superintendent recommends approval to advertise amendments to the school board policy 202, establishment of attendance zones to modify the Citrus Grove Elementary, George W. Marks Elementary, DeBerry Elementary, and Enterprise Elementary attendance zones.
So moved.
Oops, sorry. You've heard the second superintendent's recommendation. Is there a motion?
So moved.
Second.
The motion has been properly moved and second. Is there any other discussion? Hearing none, all in favor?
Aye. Aye.
Those that oppose? Ayes have it, and the motion is carried.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Let's just advertise.
Item 1803, change order, Superintendent Fritz.
1803 with Ms. Deb Mueller and our CFO and Mr. Clint Griffin, the CIO, Chief Information Officer, come forward. Welcome to the table, Clint.
Thank you, sir.
Good evening, Madam Chair, board members, and Superintendent Fritz. We don't have a PowerPoint related to this, but just wanted to come up here and discuss this with you since we know it was something that was presented previously. Initially, we had selected Follett Destiny software for our fixed asset inventory software. This was a gap in our Oracle requirements, and we recognized that we needed an additional software to replace our old homegrown system that we no longer had the code for. So what it is needed for is to track all of the fixed assets as well as all of our sheet items that are under $1,000 but are such things as computers, laptops, projectors, things of that nature that move around but are still of some value but don't meet the requirements for capitalization. So we, after the Destiny implementation was halted because we could not, they could not provide some of the requirements as we got into the project. We went back to the drawing board and started looking for other software that could be used. And this is the one, after much discussion and demonstrations, we found two that we thought were viable candidates to use, and it was decided to use Focus for this. So we have been working with them on the requirements. We have a fixed asset flow for these, and if you would so approve this tonight, then we could move forward in getting started on implementing these fixed asset process.
Okay. Thank you. Are we open for questions?
If you would like, or I could give you additional information.
Madam Chair.
Sure.
Board, Dr. Fritz, I just have a few things to add to kind of shed light on the need for such a piece of software in a district like this. So if you go back in history, the inventorying of, I guess they call them cheat items here, new to that word, which means any item under $1,000. Years ago, districts, government entities, higher eds, they never really worried about items above or under the $1,000 threshold because there really weren't many, maybe pieces of furniture or things. Now just about every piece of technology there is out there, tablets, laptops, monitor, like everything, printers, are under $1,000 now. So some of the main pieces of software are meant to track $1,000 items that don't move around very often. Just think of a device that is assigned to a student or a staff member, the turnover, the refresh, the break, swap out. That's what this piece of software enables us to do at a lot better rate than what we have now, and probably that we've ever had in the district. So just wanted to add that.
And it is an audit requirement, especially you know, when we're looking at where our federal funds go. And as staff move across the district and take their computers and printers, whatever else they may have with them, it's important to track that information. So Oracle accounts for our fixed assets, anything over $1,000 that must be depreciated. But the other items, instead of tying up our financial software with these items, can easily be controlled and tracked, inventoried on an annual basis, and reconciled for their movement.
Okay. Mr. Persis, I saw your hand.
Yeah, I can remember when the threshold was $500 under five, and now it's under $1,000. And this is such a difficult job, so I'm glad that there's some software out. This was usually assigned to some unfortunate person at every school to follow up on this, and things just get transferred from classroom to classroom, from teacher to, you don't know where these things are. Well, it was in my room. Well, I loaned it to so-and-so, and now where is it? And oh, my gosh, it was horrible. So I'm guessing, though, somebody has to enter this data in at first, so will that be that inventory person at the school?
I'm going to tell you, though, this will be on principal's evaluations. This is one of those items that this as well as textbooks, because we can't lose them. And so a meeting with Mr. West and Carmen to determine, and Clint's going to be a part of that too, for part of what is that threshold? Because, again, you know, we have to tell them so they understand it's important, and so they start to monitor that.
Yeah, good. It's serious business, because you could just lose just so much equipment.
Well, and you are correct that the inventory clerks in schools and departments are responsible for the annual inventory. We can scan that inventory with handheld scanners that we
would go around the district. Yeah.
Correct. But they would already have that information.
Yeah, but to your point, Dr. Fritz, the principals need to support this inventory clerk. I mean, they got to stand behind this person.
Yes.
It's a tough job, because then this person becomes the real bad girl. You know, trying to find things. You know.
Okay. Absolutely.
Good.
Right. And before I move on, I see you, Mr. Colon. So will they have Q codes on the devices where someone can just go scan and it'll populate into this system?
Yeah. And she can add in, but typically, there's already a sticker on each of these devices, and then you just walk around and scan, and then they populate a database.
Okay. Mr. Colon?
Projected go live?
I'm sorry.
Projected goal lives?
We are aiming. Now, we did postpone this implementation and bringing it to the board, waiting for Clint to get on board and review this. So we were pushing for May, and then we've done a lot of work on it, you know, already to get ready for this. But if that is possible, then, you know, it would be sometime in that time frame. We would like to do a physical inventory this summer, and that's always the best time. You know, we were not able to do one this past summer.
I'd like to know how we're going to create the baseline. Are we going by what shows on our records that should be there, or what already exists? Because there might be on paperwork 60 computers at one school, but when you do the physical check, when you start scanning, there are only 55. How are we going to accommodate the 5 that are missing? Where's our baseline?
We had previously been tracking all of these items, not just fixed assets, but the sheet items, within that homegrown program. And so they are currently already uploaded into Oracle. But without getting into too many details, all of the new items that are received, especially the computers, they come in a lot of times on pallets, and we have that information already electronically. They come in already tagged. They come in with the serial number. So all of that information comes from the vendor and is uploaded into Focus at that time.
And to elaborate a little more, it's going to be a combination of the effort of manual scanning and the information we already have to come to that baseline once we go live with the system.
Okay. I'm sorry, Jamie. One more thing. Are we going to allow, we can have, like, for example, our computer here identified. But what about wear and tear? What about damage to it? It might be there, but it might not be operable. Is there something there that can be, you know, the inventory? We have the computer, but the screen's cracked. Is there a way to keep track of damage?
So a lot of the inventorying process, those things can be identified. Some of the manual processes of somebody actually, you know, at the school, or district level, whoever's going around, usually a team of folks to conquer the entire district of the size of this. Visually, they're going to be scanning, so some of those things, the employee or the student will be there, and they can identify damage at that point and report that, or visually we'll be able to see that. Also, with software like this, long-term vision for me to recommend is a refresh rate of age, and with a system like this in place, that will allow us to be able to keep the age very quickly of that device, whether it's 4 or 5 years, whatever we deem is too old for use. We'll be able to identify that, and when we do these inventories, maybe incorporate a refresh plan.
That's cool. Okay. And my last question is, we trust Focus, and it's already been uploaded to Oracle. Are all those programs working?
There actually will be two interfaces, one coming from Oracle into Focus for all of that information that's held from purchasing when the items are purchased. Obviously, we may get donations and things like that. Schools may fundraise. So some of the information, as Clint said, may be a manual process, but a lot of the information will come from Oracle into Focus. And then when items are disposed of, fixed assets, then they will come back into Oracle so that that depreciation can end and we leave the fixed asset from our software, from Oracle, which is our financial statement of record.
Okay. Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, go ahead, Ms. Haynes.
Okay, so I hear that you want to start this with summer. Everybody likes to start everything with summer. So here's my concern, because I have to step out and look at something that I used to do. During summer, we have a lot of technology that is moved for summer programs. So, for example, like all the Title I iPads are picked up from
you know, schools within a geographical location, and they are moved to the summer's program site, so they're not on their site where they're housed all year. They have now been moved. So I'm not sure how you're going to inventory them, because I'll just take, for example, you know, like Blue Lake. If we're using Blue Lake as a summer site, you've got the iPads, say, from Woodward, Citrus Grove, Stark, maybe McGinnis, you know, even, you know, one of the middle schools. Now they're all sitting at Blue Lake. They're not sitting at their regular site. In addition to that, teachers are taking their – teachers that are hired for summer programs are taking their laptops with them to their summer program site, because they have to have a laptop to project, say, if they're teaching third grade reading camp. And then other teachers are taking theirs home. So I think we need to pause for a moment and think about – I know summer sounds like, wow, we could have everything on the site, all safe and secure in the media center, and one person can go in there and we can wipe this out. I just need you to know that that's not the case. I mean, you could say to teachers that are not going to work during the summer, you've got to leave your device here, but you've got all those other devices that, I mean, iPads and things are, they're moved to middle school. They're even moved to high school, so I just wanted to.
If I could make a suggestion on that, sometimes when districts do inventory, they do phases. So I support the idea of starting in May if we can, because but you want to capture things before they leave the campus or go somewhere. But where I would go with that is I would try to do it in phases, so that that pre-planning week, that time where people are coming back, that we finish it up at that point. So it's one of those processes that will continue throughout the summer rather than be a start date and an end date. If we find it to be a problem. As we move forward, then maybe with the inventory, and it was like this when I was in Hillsborough County, the inventory started in April just for that very reason, because things would be moved around and classes would be shut, and the expectation was that schools were done their inventory and submitted by the last day of students. So.
Yeah. Well, we already do have processes in place that we have been doing this inventory. This isn't going to be necessarily a different process than what we've already been doing. There's, you know, my staff and the budget office that handle this and work with the inventory clerks throughout the district. So it's not that everything will be done in the summer, but that is when we would like to start that. And again, you know, there is a phased process that takes place and has taken place, you know, for a number of years. But we are still, even though we don't have the inventory tracking system currently, we are still tracking movement. So, for instance, all of those iPads that are deployed all over the district are tracked, and we have that information during the summer where they've gone.
And in the contract, do we have measurable milestones so that you all have to come back and ask us for money?
We actually have on-site project management. We have some custom report development that will be done later on. We have training that is 4 days, and we have custom development. So the main thing that I am worried about, or not worried about, but would be concerned about, is that custom development and the hours that are included in the contract. But there's not a separate charge for that. We've had Oracle and we've had Focus already working together on the requirements with our technology services teams to map those out. And we certainly will not be paying for any of these items until that actually occurs, until each item is completed in the contract.
And so, Clint, you've had a chance to look at this, and you understand deliverables and milestones. The price we see, number one, is it feasible? And I'm going to ask you the same question, because you're somewhat the expert. You won't come before this board and ask for no more money. Am I correct?
I do not believe with this contract there will be any coming back to the board for any more money.
Okay.
Part of this contract, $63,000, is recurring maintenance on it, so that will be recurring, the implementation, training, and the project management is included in the $37,400.
Yeah, 'cause that's for the student usage fee. I get that.
Yes.
I'm
mm-hmm.
just asking.
Yes, I understand.
Okay. Any other questions, colleagues?
Do we have any cards for this item? Go ahead.
Is Cherry Roads helping us with this?
From the perspective of the interface between Oracle and Focus.
So that's part of this here? That's built into this here?
No, this is strictly the Focus fee. If you remember correctly, we had come forward with a change order that included, I believe it was $100,000 for changes in interface development, plus or minus, and we still have some of that money remaining, and they have given us an estimate that they can complete that within the amount of money that we have remaining, so there won't be an additional charge from Cherry Road.
Okay. Can I ask you all just to step back for a moment, because we have someone who would like to speak to this issue before we vote. Thank you. So when I call your name, please state your name, address, and you have 3 minutes. We have Mrs. Mary Warnoff.
Good evening, Superintendent, board members. I am Mary Jo Warnoff. I do live in Palm Coast, and I work at Creekside Middle. One of the hats I wear is inventory. This summer, technology came in. They brought in $51,000 worth of equipment. They took down all of our internet and replaced them all, and I was never informed there was new stuff. And the only reason I found out is because it ended up, I did a printout from the old system. So I wasn't informed. I have currently $1.8 million worth of equipment on this campus that I'm responsible for, and they're bringing stuff on. They're not taking the old stuff off, and it's stuck in a closet somewhere. I said, I would like that taken off my campus if you've taken it down, and I want a list of it, and it hasn't happened yet. So currently I am getting together. Right now I have over 180 items for them to come pick up and refurbish whatever they do with them. But I'm not finished yet because a lot of our equipment is old. So I'm working on that to get that list. But all I have is some asset numbers. So I have to look and find out what the serial number is and et cetera so that I have complete paperwork. But there's no help for it. And that's not the end of my job. So inventory, it's going to be difficult. And if they decide to roll out in May, I've done inventory in November for my campus for the last several years. But without the program in place, it's not there. I can't do it. I don't know where things are. But I go out and look and find things, 180 items so far, because we're getting rid of at least 3 to 4 carts of computers. But that's not all that's been gone. We have old gateways on campus that are used. There was never a refresh done for any of the office specialists. So we're working with very old equipment, slow equipment, but yet we're bringing in new technology that probably needs to be quicker. It's sad. It's sad what they've done. They take away our people. More stuff done on put on the office specialist, but there's no respect. Thank you.
Thank you. You have noted. Okay. Superintendent Fritz, is there a recommendation?
Yes, there is. Superintendent recommends the approval of the change order to MSAIS 746LD for fixed asset inventory management module.
You've heard the superintendent's recommendation. Is there a motion?
So moved.
Second.
The motion has been properly moved and second. Any other discussion?
Does this help her situation?
It will.
Well, and her and all the other people in charge of inventory?
Deb?
The question Ms. Cuthbert asked, will this new system help Mrs. Warnoff's
issue? Will it help address her concern and issue?
As well as all everyone else
and
on
anyone else
campus.
In her position.
Yeah.
Well, certainly when we take the inventory, but we will also be uploading all of we have been compiling manually all of these receipts. I mean, they're all in our in Oracle as they're being received. And so believe me, as soon as we are able to implement this, our inventory analyst will be as happy as she will because it has been so long. And we've been wanting, obviously, we were on track to do this much sooner. And that's why we wanted to bring this and get it started as soon as possible and have done a lot of the background work to get to this point. Because, yes, there is a lot of work to do and catch-up to do to get all of this inventory currently into focus. But as I said, we have those in – we have the inventory as of June 30th in Oracle. We have all of the purchases that have been made. Now, to speak to the disposal piece, that is – that would be handled by technology services as refreshes are done. So I can't speak to that piece.
So I'll speak. I did not like what I just heard, and it will be fixed. I will have a conversation with the team on the infrastructure equipment being the responsibility of the schools themselves. I don't know that operation right now, but I feel strongly that that should not be their responsibility of inventorying the infrastructure equipment or disposing of any of the old equipment. So that's the first I've heard of that, and that piece of it will be resolved quickly.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Yeah, well, I was just going through. It brought back memories. I like when they brings back good memories. I don't like the other kind. But the disposal of the old, that's what drives the inventory people crazy because it's just sitting there, and they're held responsible for it until it's off the campus and deleted from their inventory. And it's just a space issue, too, because it's just taking up space. So, yeah, if you could get on, if we could do that, clean out what should be removed from this inventory, that'd be a
the network refreshes at schools are so massive. This is the exact same problem at every district I've worked at. It's an afterthought. Instead of the day they refresh, they leave with the old equipment. Yeah. They just set it down, and it stays there. It gets forgotten. The burden gets put on the school. Seen it all before. It will get fixed.
Thank you. Mr. Colon?
So in order to accomplish this and be successful, and I, at my organization, we did a very similar thing where they actually put barcodes on everything from – the water cooler all the way up to everything had a barcode. But that requires people. And so in order to accomplish this, because there is cost savings on the back of this, you know, and I truly believe that, will there be an opportunity or a need to get some folks to help? And may we, and again, education is so different than my world, you know, but is there an opportunity or maybe some folks who'd be willing to work over the summer to help us accomplish this, who understand the classroom, who understand technology? Because you can bring in a company and they come in and do inventory, but if they don't understand a school or a classroom, it's going to, you know, you're going to get what you're going to get, what you pay for. And so maybe an opportunity to get it done right. Again, I've seen it where they came in and just overhauled because, you know, you're marking that water cooler, that needs a number. Okay, well, that number needs to go into the system, and so on and so forth. And you almost need to do it fast before the stuff moves. If you go to one classroom today, and by the time you get back to the next classroom, it almost has to be kind of like the supermarket. You know, you walk in when they're doing inventory, you see tags that say do not inventory. And so will we need more help to accomplish this, because you have quite the task ahead of you, and I don't envy you at all. And so something like this can maybe something that with enough hands on deck in June and folks who are willing to come in and work, we could maybe able to accomplish. So
And just speak of that, remember we do have students that are being trained in this area that may be a good asset because that gives them community service hours, it gives them experience where it doesn't necessarily have to cost the district anything because we're still going to provide our students the service and give them an opportunity to learn. So that I think that's something they can have a conversation about. Ms. Cuthbert?
Mr. Griffin, are you suggesting that the responsibility of inventory should be at an administrative level?
Depends what it is. So a lot of what she mentioned with the computer refresh is all the comm rooms for the network equipment behind the scenes. And there's a lot of that per school. So part of the initiative that's already going on here prior to me is some of these schools getting digital ready, something I'm very familiar with coming from Orange County. They're using a new technology, Cisco Meraki. And the beauty of that technology is all of that hardware can be seen through a dashboard to where you never have to inventory it again once it's all set up. So that'll save some of the man hours that it takes to go to each one of those closets. Some of her pain points that she mentioned is when they're coming in and doing this, they're taking out all the old equipment, leaving it there, and then leaving. I do not like that. I've seen this at Orange County 2 years ago. Fix that very quickly because what you have is you have that help on that campus doing that project as a project team. Some of our folks, the consulting company, the vendor, the cabling company, all there that afternoon or maybe a week. Then the help is there to take that old equipment back to the storage warehouse to properly dispose and surplus. They leave it there, unexcusable. That will be fixed.
Okay. So what we're trying to do is alleviate that responsibility on an office specialist. Okay. Thank you.
Okay. There is a motion on the floor, colleagues. Any other discussion?
Thank you.
Thank you. So we second. All in favor, aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? Ayes have it, and the motion is carried. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Do we have any? There are no more public participation. Board item, board members' comments. Who would like to start?
Go ahead. Like to start by saying good night.
And so I have a list of concerns. I just want to say I am so excited about where we're going and, you know, the progress that we're seeing. Just hearing somebody say, I will take care of that. I don't like that, too. Have a good night.
Yeah.
Okay. Thanks.
Okay, so we voted tonight under the consent for the internal auditor piece.
Mm-hmm.
And so I just want to say that we had a committee, an audit committee meeting. That's why I missed the spelling bee. But I would have rather missed the spelling bee. No, but we, hopefully now we can move forward that the contract has been approved so that we can get some form of internal audit finished this year since the agreement was that we would possibly get two in, and we're a little behind, but I just wanted to give all of you an update on that.
Okay, thank you. Ms. Cuthbert?
The only thing I have to say is Friday is Valentine's Day. Mm-hmm. It is also the two-year anniversary of Parkland. Please keep our students, all of our students, especially on Friday, safe and secure in your heart, so thank you. Good night. You.
Mr. Dorn? Superintendent, I have one item. I know that when we traveled to Tallahassee that several of us talked about eventually going back to meet with our legislators. Reuben has agreed to do that. Would anybody else like to go? Because
when are you going?
Tuesday.
Oh, Tuesday. I can't Tuesday.
And so with that, while we're here, I just want to bring that forward, letting you know that he will be going to represent
Thank you very much.
I
can go at this point if you want me to.
Okay. So I don't anticipate it soon. I think I'm driving up and back. I'll get the platform and agenda. I know we've got some talk with the FRS and stuff, so I'll get that information. Now that we have some concrete, this is sort of how it will affect us. And I'm also going to be taking something up to their offices so that they have Volusia County Schools on their desk and can always remember us. So thank you.
Thank you for going on our behalf. And one last announcement. I know in our district we do have a lot of unrest, and people are concerned. And before we leave, I do want to have our faculty and staff at ease. There are changes coming. But change does not mean you're losing your job. It just means we are reshifting where our focus is. And if we're going to look at student achievement, I mean, we're looking more back at the classroom and how do we accomplish that. So I really do want to dismantle your stress level. We did not bring Dr. Fritz in here to just fire people. That was never the intent. We did bring Dr. Fritz in here to restructure this district and to get us in a position where we can do some of the things we know we need to do and to make sure that our classrooms and student achievement become our number one priority. So with that said, happy Valentine's Day. I'll see you all when I get back in the country. Yeah. Have a good evening.